This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Kyle, Luke, and Jimmy. We are back with our Binge With Us Rooks and Vets series. For those of you who followed us for Spartacus Season 1, Blood and Sand, then you know the drill. For new listeners, the way this format works is that two of our hosts who have seen a show before, our vets, will be joined on a panel with two hosts who have not seen the show before, our rooks, and react in real time as we binge together. On today's podcast episode, we'll be covering episodes 3 and 4 of the Spartacus prequel season, Gods of the Arena. And boys, we just keep on chugging along here with the bangers. My God, our characters are growing right in front of our eyes. I love the drama, the political intrigue. It's just going right into the episodes 3 and 4.
The sex.
Again, no Paul, no sex play-by-play here.
Yeah, no, these two episodes were obviously going to be the middle kind of transitional episodes that take us from the all of the beginning, like new season, new characters and new plots and all that point. So now we got to kind of set up the seeds that are going to be the last climax of episode 5 and 6, which are just, I cannot wait to get to them. But these two alone, they didn't miss. They're great.
Nah, they're great. A lot of questions were answered. You know, I was pumped watching these episodes.
I was just going to say, consider those seeds planted. Yeah. Maybe set up a killer episode 5 and 6.
Mm-hmm. I've been waiting for you guys to meet the namesake of this name, which, did you say the episode name? Paterfamilias.
Yeah.
Yeah, meaning just the male head of the family. That's what that means in English. So I've been waiting for this character to get introduced because I was just like, we've talked about, what are we going to call him? I've been calling him Papa B.
You could just call him Dominus.
Titus
has
whatever.
Less syllables than Papa B.
Anytime when you say Bodyatus, we got to be thinking about our main man.
Yeah.
So just know.
Yeah. Well, at that point, we're Titus or Papa B. I'm
16 episodes into Bodyatus being Bodyatus.
But yeah, like this character, he had like even name drops in Season 1, Blood and Sand, the first season. And like, you know, he's been being talked about in the first couple episodes. Like he's such an interesting dynamic. And like, he changes the whole feel of the show when he's on,
Him and Bodyatus' interactions are far and away my favorite part of these two episodes.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because as a rook, I actually never expected to have him. I just thought he was going to be the side character. Like, he was just going to be off being sick the whole thing. And this was just us seeing Bodyatus starting from the ground and moving up.
He
got me.
I had to figure in episode 1, they were really emphasizing the fact that his father was still a major player in the Ludus. So I figured we were going to finally get to meet, Titus Bodyatus, the current Dominus of House Bodyatus. It's a crazy dynamic because we're so used to our Bodyatus. I can't even call him like Quintus Bodyatus because he's just Bodyatus in my eyes.
Yep.
And now there's two Bodyatus. Sigh. I don't know. Anyway, are we good to get right into
it? Good.
Episode 3. Let's get it. Entitled Paterfamilias, like we just touched upon, and it will start in the Ludus. It is Quintus Bodyatus. Are we just going to call him Bodyatus?
Yeah.
Okay. So Bodyatus addressing the gladiators from his balcony. He is telling them the news that Gannicus will be representing House Bodyatus in the Primus of the opening games of the new arena, and that Animaeus has now been dubbed the new Doctore. Same as the old Doctore, baby.
Oh, he's our Doctore, man.
It's so weird seeing like the origins of him first, like taking step onto the sand is not a gladiator and actually like a leader, and it's
so awkward.
Far he comes into in Season 1 when he's just like leading the intro sessions and he's whipping
whips,
that whip.
Yeah.
He's so unsure.
I was gonna say he doesn't even know how to use it yet. Yeah. It's hilarious. Our boy Doctore, he's back, baby.
I think we also get a little shot of like, you could see Gannicus is very mentally distant from the repercussions of him and Melita's interaction. So that's obviously going to play a huge part in these next two episodes as well.
Yeah, you can tell that when, you know, this is being announced that he's he's the champion, he's going to be in a Primus. You know, you would think our boy Gannicus would be, you know, jumping for joy, working the crowd, and he's kind of just looking down. He's a little out of it. And then at the very end, he puts his arm up, but you could tell his heart's not in it.
The next scene that we get, I don't think we get too much more there, is Doctore, Gannicus, and Melita having an interaction wherein they take the words of Badiatis to heart, and they are clearly going through with not making Doctore privy to the fact that they fucked. So we kind of have this weird interaction where Melita and Gannicus are being awkward around him. Animaeus is none the wiser about it. So this triangle that we had that was like such a tight-knit friendship has just been screwed.
Yeah, you know, it's sad.
It's just they're so uncomfortable around each other. And it was tough. That was the bromance. All in one. And now it's...
Whoa, it's a little early to say it was the bromance.
Yeah, we'll see. But I mean, I felt the tension in these two episodes.
Episode 4 didn't help either. Yeah. Episode 4 did not help, but we'll get to that.
And in the exact opposite way, the trio of Badiatis, Lucretia, and Gaia are now just orgy part 2. I'm always down for a good Gaia, Lucretia. Yeah,
they're running on premium fuel over
there. They're all happy. This is the best day of their lives. They're celebrating right now.
The scene is just hilarious, like the whole thing. Yeah. I mean, are we gonna get, is that where we're at next?
Yeah.
I mean,
that's what happens.
Yeah, we're at the,
I mean, the part where she's pouring the wine and he just goes right for the nip.
Yeah.
So nice. Baller move. That man, that's not his first time around the city. He knows what he's doing. But that's like the best like scene transition. They like to flip the camera on its side and then like we go into the wall. And then now we're above those three in the room. And it's just Badiatis like screaming to the heavens, like, at last, the gods remove cock from fucking ass.
Yep.
So classic, good.
And he goes right in to like have a threesome with two beautiful women.
Yep.
So man, good.
I just loved seeing my man Badiatis have his moment in the sunshine. Like, finally, like, gods removed cock from fucking ass. He's been through the ringer. He said it right.
And
he deserves it.
Like, amazing, just like, pure happiness just gets cut right in the middle. Papa B makes his first appearance on screen.
So awkward.
Yeah. He's
I can't imagine
that ever happening
to me.
Lucretia right away like tries to say, "Oh, hello, Dad." Like, I love that she calls him Dad, and just like not the time or the place. It's just
yeah, awful. I think like, you know, he just kind of rightfully explodes. He doesn't know what's going on. He's hearing all this stuff. And he pulls Badiatis aside, right? And we get that conversation.
Yeah,
we learn a little bit here.
Before we move on, Paul, if you're listening, I hope we covered the sex scene adequately to your liking. Moving on to Badiatis and Titus's discussion. Yeah, so he essentially just brings, you know, lays it all out on the table. Badiatis, like we just said, he has his swagger. He's feeling good. And Titus just reminds him of all of the shady dealings and people that he had to step on to get to this point that his, you know, dreams are finally coming true. Dreams, not dreams, but you know what I mean?
Right, right. Yeah, and then this is where we see our first slight, I guess, where he tells Badiatis that Salonius is the one that told him about, you know, how he was working, or he was clashing with Tullius and having issues with Tullius. And I always forget the younger
Vettius.
Vettius. I always want to say Ventilus.
Yeah, man. Good Salonius snitching.
Good Salonius snitching. So, well, you guys asked, but I don't know where that's, is that enough yet? We'll see.
So, yeah, I was reading the scene because, you know, it does blow up eventually. And it doesn't seem like Badiatis has completely turned against Salonius yet.
He just pushes it aside.
He said, you know, Titus said, "Count good Salonius among the men that like will keep me informed in Capua." And he said, "Salonius is seized by unnecessary worry. Me and Tullius just had a minor agreement." So he's not throwing Salonius under the bus yet, but the seeds are being planted.
You know,
we see where this collision course is going.
And, Papa Badiatis, what are we calling him again?
Papa B.
So Papa B knows, I mean, he's obviously very familiar with Badiatis' shit. So Badiatis says that quote, and he's obviously not believing that. I mean, he says right to his face that nothing with a man like Tullius is minor. And it's just like, ooh, he's an OG. He knows.
He honestly had no idea what was going on. Maybe he just doesn't respect Gannicus' skills at all, which he probably has never seen Gannicus fight before.
I think he said something in this scene like Gannicus is a fool. Because the last he saw him was probably when he was an up-and-comer at the Ludus and was probably just all swagger with nothing to back it up.
Yeah. Right. He calls him a joke. Like, to us, after the first two episodes, we're like, whoa. Why don't you back off?
He definitely doesn't know what he is.
So I guess it makes sense, but Papa B really gives off the impression that he's like, you definitely should have sold Gannicus to Tullius.
Yeah.
And that right away, I hope, made you guys automatically just not like him, because I'm out.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, body oddest is body oddest, but anyone opposing body oddest for the most part, I'm against. Unless it's like later with the Spartacus thing.
Honestly, you can't hate body oddest. Only I can.
Yeah,
hate
only
body
we
oddest.
Can hate him. Yeah.
Honestly, I'm just Titus is a fucking boomer, dude. He's just an old head stuck in his ways. Yep. And I think Lucretia says exactly that. He's a fucking boomer. No, I'm kidding. She says he's stuck in his ways. He's an old head.
I didn't know they had that term back then.
And they're just going to clash because that's not who Body Otis is. He grabs life by the balls and just like rides it to the top. Yep. And if he's not doing that, he's not living.
Exactly. Yeah. And he even says about his son, he's like, even when you were a kid, your eyes have always been towards the horizon. Like having ambition's a bad thing.
Yeah,
like,
right.
What the hell is this?
And that's, I really like that quote in this scene because this is our first real interaction that we get to see of things we've heard about in the first season and this season of the big difference between Body Otis and his dad. Because, I mean, Salonius says it in, like, the first episode, I believe, like, oh, this isn't how your father would do business. Like, we should ask your father all this stuff. And Body Otis is like, ah, like, fuck my dad. Like, we got this shit. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, Tullius alludes to it, too. And I think it's the, what is it, episode two? Might be episode one. But, I mean, we find out later when we get to that part that Tullius just likes stepping all over the freaking dad, you know, mm-hmm. Papa B. So he sees that Body Otis isn't like that. And he's like, oh, man, you're not like your father. Yeah, but in a, you know, he wants to be able to step all over him.
He
so.
Doesn't. And the father doesn't even care at all that Quintus, our main Body Otis, got the Primus. From
right.
Varys.
Yeah.
Like, he's just like, just he cares more about the means to the end, which obviously Body Otis has the exact polar opposite.
Yeah.
But, you know. That's just how you know. Like,
you also see
we're not gonna like this guy.
You kind of get a little feel of where Body Otis gets that little quick-tongued wit from, though, because they have a really yeah. nice back and forth
oh, yeah.
with like how they
for
speak.
Sure.
He's definitely smart. He's yeah. just not as smart as young.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, they punch counter punch, and Body Otis, it's his dad, so Body Otis usually comes out on the losing end of it mm-hmm. because his dad's like, you know, I'm the OG, I built this house, so
yeah.
kind of
yeah.
gets that benefit of the doubt, but still.
We got a lot of OGs in this series, this first season.
It's a prequel,
oh,
man. Prequel, baby. Yeah. Yeah.
Gods
OG
of
Papa
the
arena.
B. Yeah, and Blood and Sand, it was great. Just the Gs.
Just
the
Gs.
OGs, yeah.
Yeah.
But to end the scene, Titus was like, what do we have? What does our Ludus have that Tullius does not, that Varys would favor? And he said, we have what Tullius does not. We have Gannicus. Like, that's mm-hmm. why he wants us in the Primus. And that concludes that scene. The next one, we get a quick scene in the villa with our ladies, Lucretia and Gaia. Essentially, Lucretia's just saying, Gaia, be on your best behavior now that Titus is around. Like, he doesn't
Gaia's
fuck
just
around.
Gaia's like, Mom, I want to do opium and yeah. suck dick.
Yo, she's so fun, man. She's just, like, so bubbly. And then as soon as she gets slighted, he walks away. She's like, that withered old fuck.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Dude, he just walks up stone-faced as shit. And they're, like, saying, oh, father, hello. And Guy is so bubbly, like, hello, hello. And
yeah.
he's just having none of it. He
yeah.
doesn't smile, react. He just gets out.
She has that honey poison switch. She can hit very quickly.
Yeah.
And it's really fun to watch it happen.
I'd fall for it.
Oh, yeah.
In a heartbeat. I mean, hey. Guy, MVP.
And then this takes I think the next scene is like a quick transition over to him actually walking out onto the balcony, right? And looking at his men. Is that the next where he wants to actually see all the gladiators again? Or
yeah, and then I think we go to the Ludus. Does he say anything
yeah.
while he's looking over the balcony? Because
I think
the next
I
scene
say,
is Barca and
yeah, sure. the next scene is Crixus doing the walk by himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just they show us that very quickly. And then
yeah.
we move into them eating.
Well, and I thought that was weird because didn't we already see them do the walk? Asher,
yeah,
well,
yeah,
but they already got the mark. Yeah.
Crixus wasn't was Crixon Crixus
I thought
in that?
Crixus was in that walk. Though.
He was, yeah.
He should have been. He's still a recruit.
Okay, so they just
oh,
keep
did they
doing
do that
it.
Every night? I thought that was like a one
it's
night.
It's just
thing.
Like the whole he still doesn't have the mark. He's doing this training. Yeah.
Oh, I just thought that was like a
oh,
one.
Oh, I thought
time,
that was
like
one
no,
of
no,
the
no,
steps
no,
of
shit.
Training.
Yeah,
oh, okay, yeah.
I'm
I never
get
got
these
that.
Boys big, man.
Yeah, I heard that.
Mission accomplished.
So when he looks over the balcony, is this the part where we see? Gannicus like not coming out late and that's more where he's saying like he's a joke and he you know he's not you know what I mean when
no
he,
that's
no,
not here
okay
this
one has more to do with so they're getting food again and now it's Asher and Dagon
oh,
have
yeah.
both been branded with the mark and you know the gladiators are putting on a show like applauding them like eat your fill your brothers now and they pissed in the porridge again.
Yeah, I love Barca's fucking reaction
Barca,
to
dude,
it.
He's such a bully, man.
Yo, his reaction's so good.
It's like fucking Lucy with the football. I'm not going to do it, Charlie Brown. I'm not going to do it. She yanks it away
Yo,
every
but
single
there
time.
There was one quick scene that I picked up. I guess I didn't pick it up the first time or whatever. It didn't stand out. But basically, as soon as like Dagan finds out there's piss in it, he stands up. He's about to charge Barca. And like as he's getting closer, right away, Gannicus just stands up and like grabs him by the neck.
The neck. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he put his hand
so
on his chest.
So epic.
Yeah.
And then right away, like Dagan doesn't even attempt. He's not going to fuck with Gannicus. Yeah. Like, he's a champion. That little moment did so much for me for some reason.
So none of the gladiators respect the mark that they were given, which we already knew. But also Gannicus looked at Barca disapprovingly. He said, Barca, why are you fucking around with this right now? Like, yeah.
Did you see that? Gannicus doesn't give a fuck.
No, but he gives a fuck about this.
He doesn't care that they got the mark in the way they got it. Like, he just thinks they have the mark. It's the Brotherhood. I'm over it.
I made a note of that he went as far as to give Barca a disapproving look.
Yeah, like, I saw
you,
the look.
You were in the wrong to do this, Barca, whereas if he didn't give a fuck, he would just do nothing.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying he gives a fuck that he's pissing in the porridge. He doesn't give a fuck about the way that the Syrians got the mark.
Right.
They
so
have the mark.
Yeah, okay. Barca's still doing it to them because they don't,
they have never been in a real gladiator fight.
Right. Yeah. They don't see him as a brother because of the way it happened. But, you know, like you're saying, Gannicus sees the mark. He's like, we're fine. You know?
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's his thoughts.
So Titus rolls up and starts getting chummy with a lot of the gladiators, remembering his old men. And then he gets to Animaeus and says, look at how the years have treated you. It's good to see. He greets him as an old friend and says, let's retire to your cell. We'll share a meal and recall, you know, get nostalgic on old stories.
That's exactly how I would treat Doctor. Oh,
he was so happy.
Yeah,
oh yeah.
I was actually worried at first that he would give him some shit because it wasn't his Doctor, because he does ask. He says, where's, you know, oh, you got the Doctor gear on, what's going on? I thought because, you know, earlier he's actually given Badiatis some shit about the choices he's made. Mm-hmm. I thought he was gonna say something. I mean, you can't question our boy Doctor,
oh, no
but
way.
You know, I thought he was going to be asking why that change was made.
Though people do in this very episode.
They do.
The Gaul. Not Crixus the Gaul, yeah. But the Gaul of some people.
That's a good one.
Wow.
So right before he shows up, the Gannicus and Doctor have a little moment where Doctor sits down and Gannicus is like, you know, you shouldn't be sitting with a lesser man.
True.
And then Doctor is like, whatever, it doesn't matter that I'm Doctor. I don't want anything to get in the way of our friendship.
Yeah.
But now I'm thinking about that lesser man is definitely, I think, a little bit of a double entendre there, because I think Gannicus is partially ashamed, obviously, that he just fucked Doctor's wife. Mm-hmm. And also, obviously, he's a gladiator while Doctor now has the title of champion.
Right.
Yeah, no, for sure. And we see that play out a little bit more over mostly next episode, but you're right. Yeah. And then we kind of, or we go to, we skipping over to the cell.
Yeah, and then now we're in the cell.
Yeah, and dude, right away we get like Animaeus kind of just going for the, let me drop the Doctor title, let me back onto the sands, I want to be a gladiator. And I just wanted to bring it up because we get a Theocles name drop here. Mm-hmm. Loved it. It was awesome. They start talking about, everyone except for Animaeus sees that battle between Theocles and Animaeus in the past like as a victory. Just
because, yeah.
You know, like, uh-huh. Of course he's going to see it. He's the honorable Doctor, he's not gonna see it in the same way, but I don't know. I think he deserves his vacation.
He literally says in the first season at Spartacus that you took my shame away by beating Theocles. He was shamed by the loss.
Yeah.
Oh, when anybody nice else would be like, you know, like everyone else would be like, oh my gosh, I'm alive. Hell yeah.
That's so nice.
We get a little mention about the origin story of Animaeus. Not too much, but look forward to that.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
No. Well, that's also kind of cool, like Badiatis' dad, Papa B.
Yeah.
As, you know, like the eye for the talent, I guess you could say.
He saw what basically our Badiatis saw in Crixus.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Same exact thing.
Yeah.
And then we get a little nugget of info that's 99.9% irrelevant, that the OG Doctor's name was what, Opeus?
I didn't even write it down.
We didn't know that at all.
No.
Because we were calling him OG, obviously.
I mean, he gets called Doctor. Same thing with season one, where we don't know it's Animaeus until it's Animaeus.
Yeah. Right.
And this is when Titus actually says, like, this is pretty much the only decision that my son's made that I agree with because of how basically much Animaeus bleeds for House Badiatis. He's like, I can't let you go back to being a gladiator. This was a good decision.
Damn.
It was.
Even when they're like butting heads, they still agree that Animaeus, aka Dr. Mm-hmm. Doctore, is the beast. Mm-hmm. The goat. I love it.
He even goes as far to say, like, besides the Dominus, the Doctore is the most important person in a Ludus. So like, mm-hmm. you need to be here and you need to help bring this house back to glory.
I mean, who the hell would it be besides our boy? at this point, like looking at any of the other options.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, it would be nobody
else. Yeah, I was going to say, hey, there's not enough named characters.
If it could have been anybody else, it would have been, but it couldn't have been anybody besides him. But the next morning, I guess, we see Titus on the balcony overlooking the training. He has an interaction with Melita, who we also kind of remember. He's fond of her. They have a good rapport together. He's like well admired amongst the slaves, Titus, it seems.
He just seems like a kind, simple man, honestly.
Yeah, I don't see him like, you know, banging his slaves or getting head from his slave just to get hard like Badiatis was doing in the first season.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Like, he treats them the right way.
He's pretty much the opposite of Badiatis in every way.
Yeah. And the slaves hate Badiatis.
So. Yeah. He also has that dad vibe. It comes up a little later with Lucretia, but he's just, you know, cracking jokes with the waiter and things like that. He has like, you know, when your dad's like a little awkward with the waitress at the restaurant. He tries to like those jokes that fall flat.
He does have a little bit of a personality shift towards the end of next episode where he's like kinder towards everyone. There's like, you know, obviously the end he blows up again, but it's just weird because they show you so many different facets of his personality so quickly and in a pretty good job.
Yeah.
Just based on how he interacts with different levels of people in the.
He's walking into a shit show in his opinion in his house. He's walking in, his son's banging two women. There's people fighting everywhere. Like, the doctore's gone. So he's kind of like, what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah.
But anyway, so he's on the balcony just overlooking the gladiators training. And this is Animaeus still just showing that he's not, doesn't quite have the respect that a doctore needs to command the ludus. And he has an interaction with Barca where he tells him to spar with Crixus. Barca gives him a little bit of back talk saying, I need like a better opponent essentially. And Titus overhears this from the balcony and kind of dominates both of them, goes over Doctore's head and commands Barca to do as Animaeus says. Right. I thought it was like belittling to both of them. And that's just another power dynamic. Like Dominus gets the final say in everything.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely trying to have Doctore's back, but it does kind of belittle him. It just makes it seem more so like he's not getting the respect because they're not listening to him. They're listening to Papa B. Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Papa B's worried about it because he knows it's not going to be like respect's going to have to be earned. Like he knows that it's going to be a little bit. So he's just kind of taking charge to get shit in order right now.
I mean, I feel like they should already respect him. I mean, he's literally Animaeus. Like all of his accolades, everything, everyone respected him as one of the best gladiators. You would think that they would just be okay with him being Doctore, but
think that Barco was like disrespecting him. He was just talking to him as he would if Animaeus was a gladiator. Yeah. So it was like he didn't say fuck this, I don't like you as Doctore. He just said, Animaeus, like I need a better challenge. Like he cracked a joke about it, but it was, you wouldn't say that to your manager or something. Yeah. You know, he's just still treating him like a peer when the respect's just not there yet, and it has to be built.
It's like if your boy gets promoted to be your manager and it's the first day on the job. And it's like, we used to crack these jokes, but maybe it's not as appropriate anymore.
We get two little tidbits that I liked right after this, where actually when Crixus and Barca are matching up together and, you know, Barca's beating the shit out of Crixus a little bit, he drops the line. He says, I'm without lesson against it, but your instructions are well received. And it just like, It's so well written that Crixus is the way he is in first season.
He's a grinder, like, man.
He completely just says the right things to express his great character development into what he becomes in episode one of season one.
The gladiators aren't allowed to. The gladiators aren't allowed to show that they like the new recruits. Like they have to like fuck with them, before, like haze them before they get the mark. But all of them must low-key be like, yeah, this Crixus guy, he's pretty cool. He gets it, you know?
For sure.
He gets other things, too.
He does. He's about to start getting that.
They respect him more than Asher with the fake mark. 100%.
100%.
And he's not even marked yet, so.
One more point here, too, is that we do see, this is when we see Gannicus kind of just, like, sloping out of the champions' quarters. And Titus is like, pissed a little bit.
And then at the same time, Badiatis comes in out of his quarters, a little drunk. Nice little parallel between the boys.
Quintus and Titus says we have to head to town to deal with something. Quintus says, I'll bring Barca with us. He'll provide an escort. And Titus says, why Barca? He's a gladiator, not a bodyguard. Like, leave him here. So I thought that was crazy. I thought something was going to happen, like someone was going to die. And that's what solidified that Barca is, he's never leaving the Ludus without Barca again.
Yeah.
Maybe it's still good.
And I do want to rewind a little bit back to the Ludus scene, because Animaeus does, Doctore does tell Gannicus, you know, go talk to Crixus. And this is where we find out that Crixus has never faced a spear. And Gannicus tells him, you were doing very well against me, you know, with the two swords. If you take away the spear, now he's minus a weapon, and you're good to go for the fight. And that obviously is foreshadowing for later.
So we get that scene after a scene in the market.
Right.
Oh,
but I think it's the same Ludus scene, but yes, that does happen.
Okay, cool.
It's pretty, I mean, it's literally identical scene.
Let's just go through that scene real quick, then jump back to the marketplace, because dude, the beginning of that scene's so funny. It's Barca just like putting Crixus on his ass,
yeah,
and then just walking up to him and just grabbing his dick.
Yes, yes. Says, you are better like while he's on the ground, he says, you are better matched against wooden men. He just grabs a handful of Crixus nuts and says, work on the palace goal.
Yeah, Crixus hasn't gotten pussy yet, but he's gotten gotten a Barca hand all over his.
Okay, so next we get Gannicus kind of talking to Doctore. Barca had just given Crixus the command to go fight the palace, and Gannicus comes over and says, are we to follow Barca's commands now? But Doctore says, well, he shares my thoughts. Perhaps the words of a champion would aid Crixus's cause. So he says, Gannicus, go over, talk to Crixus, like, get his head right. He just got murked by Barca.
Yeah, and that's what I was talking about, where they talk about the spear and Crixus saying he's never faced a spear. And, Gannicus tells him, you know, get rid of the spear, you're good to go. Mm-hmm.
So we get a little bit of background. Well, first off, Gannicus approaches him with saying, days past, you fought me with something approaching skill, which was a great one-liner. we get some background into Crixus, because Gannicus says, you're a Gaul, you have never fought in Alverni, which is, I guess, the tribe that Barca comes from, who traditionally use spears, which I just thought was a cool thing. And then going forward, just another line, Gannicus is just giving him his thoughts. You should be quite the scholar by the time Barca beats you to death, because Crixus tells him, every scar on me is a lesson.
Yeah.
So we just get a nice Gannicus Crixus moment. I attribute Gannicus to like what Spartacus was, and I just love seeing these interactions with Crixus and the champions of Capua. So that's just me.
They have a really nice relationship.
Yeah.
Because Crixus is like dead set serious. Like, yeah, I want to win glory in the arena. Like, I'll do whatever it takes. Again, it's just like,
yeah,
I'm champ, I'll drink some wine, I'll fuck some bitches.
So that's all I got on that. You guys, anything?
No, right. I think we're ready for the we're gonna link together all three of the marketplace scenes real quick, because there's a lot going on here.
Yeah, starting off, it's gonna be Quintus and Titus rolling into town, and we find out that they're going to see Tullius. Titus wants to kind of smooth things over. He's the old head. He says, you know, Tullius is above our stable, we have to respect him. I'm gonna go make amends for the shit you've caused.
And this is a little weird to me, because Tullius doesn't have like a formal Roman title that really we've seen like garnish a lot of respect, like in past episodes. Like, he's just a rich Roman that used to be a soldier. So it's weird that that his father treats him like this, because it's not like he's the magistrate, you know.
I mean, the magistrate's kind of in his pocket, though.
Yeah, I guess
we've
that's
seen
part
that
of the
from
reason,
the market
sure.
scene.
And,
well,
and
market
he's just
fight.
Like a he's just a really powerful figure in Capua, because he grew up there and they.
Yeah, he's just clout.
All right.
So he says, you know, Tullius says, your presence dealing in delicate business has sorely been missed. Titus says, to be rectified presently. Vettius is there, by the way, looking like a straight black-eyed bitch. And him and Bodiatus exchanging looks is the best. They're both being so petty, just like little 5-year-old kids, like hiding behind their dads, like after a little like schoolyard fight.
Bodiatus is like pacing a little bit,
yeah, like
far away,
kicking rocks and stuff. Doesn't want to make full eye contact, but he knows Vettius is there.
My issue with that was like Vettius was. I don't know, maybe it was just this how the scene looked to me, but it looked like Vettius was trying to portray the fact that he was the one that was wronged first. Like, obviously you beat the shit out of Bodiatus first. Like, don't look at him like you were wronged out of nowhere. I don't know.
Well, he doesn't expect that kind of payback, because he's got Tullius, he's powerful. So he's like, damn.
So And as we know, Battiatis did a good job covering his tracks so that there was no evidence. So when Vettius kind of accuses him and says, you know, you were the one that got this hit on me. He said, did you see faces? Did they bear my mark? You wet cunt. I love it, dude. He just says, you're a little pussy, dude. I know your place.
To be fair, they work out every single part of the plan. The whole plot gets exposed, but he's like, you can't tie it back to me.
Oh, yeah. No, he hit it right on the head. I just love that. He has the audacity to be like, you wet cunt.
Battiatis is easily one of the most quotable characters in television history.
If we know anything about our boy Battiatis, is he can make a plan, okay? Mm-hmm. He can figure out how to make a plan work.
So to leave this scene, Titus says, you know, Vettius and Battiatis be gone. Leave reasonable men to discourse. Your son has much to learn in the ways of diplomacy, a subject all young men struggle to master. I just like that exchange. And then what is our next people that we get in the market?
I think it's the ladies now running into Varus.
Yeah, Varus, Senator Varus shows up. They're being friends and they invite Varus back to the Ludus to look at the gladiators. He says, you mistake me. I want to see Melita get fucked again and do some opium with you girls. Like, that's what I want.
I think that this dude that he's with is the creepiest guy.
I hate him.
In the history of TV, I really think. I was cringing at him this whole time.
So who are you referring to? Cassutius?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. He also is another, I was looking just at the wiki, he's also another Upper Roman with no actual like title that's relevant to us. So he's just another rich guy that has
just likes the eyeliner. He likes being a creepy motherfucker.
Yeah, I don't like him at all. And I feel bad talking about it because that's like that's an actor who looks like that.
Yeah.
But that dude sucks.
Oh my gosh.
What he is about to do also does not help
everything.
Our
yeah.
perceptions of him. But yeah, he totally sucks.
Cassutius and Varus are just the kink masters, man. They're just whack.
Yeah, just like walking up scratching their necks, like, y'all got any more of them slaves fucking?
They just have stupid power and stupid wealth, and they can just get away
and do stupid
stuff.
Shit with
it's wild.
So this is in the villa, right?
Like, yeah, now they're back in the villa.
Yeah, so like Lucretia does a good job here though, because she quickly like saves Melita and Gannicus from having to bang again, right?
Well, she says right when he looks at Melita and says, like, this is what I desire from the House of Battiatis, she says, no, not Melita, and he threatens to go, oh, maybe Vettius has slaves that can accommodate me. So he threatens to go to Vettius's crib to watch slaves fuck each other. I don't know. Varus is crazy. She steps in. Gaia, of course, steps in and says, ah, no, don't go. Aha. Like, that would suck. Lucretia offers a virgin, essentially. Then the video pans to Diana and Navia, who are the two resident virgins of House Battiatis. And they look excited.
And we know who's going to be picked. And they really do, though. It's
weird.
Yeah,
they look at, well, you know, they probably built it up in their heads. Yeah. They don't know how slaves are treated.
Yeah, that was the whole point of the earlier episode conversation where Melita said, if you rush it, it's going to bruise the rose petal or whatever she said.
Yep.
And this
rose petal.
This seems hilarious because they literally get judged on how tight they are to determine who he picks. I guess, thank God, Crixus is praying, like, you know, retroactively praying that Navy was a little loose.
We get a Battiatis and Salonius scene before that, right?
I mean, like when he picks her, is there?
Well, I mean, like, because they meet in the market, and then
Battiatis
runs into Salonius because Battiatis gets kicked out of the meeting and he's kicking rocks on the street with that weird chick who's just screaming.
Oh, the chick with her eyes?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. Her eyes are stitched closed and she has no legs.
It's and then he runs in Salonius and confronts him about, because first time he's seen him since his dad told him that.
That's
Salonius
happening,
told him
like,
everything.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So we're doing all the Gaia. Yeah.
I don't think too much happens with Navia and Diana, though, so we can just cut that scene and talk about the Quintus and Salonius.
I have so many notes for that Navia Diana scene because it's all this guy sucks. Like,
if you want to let him roll, I think we're closing the door on the scene. So let's hear it.
All right. I just thought it was weird that he's not even the one having sex with them, and he's out here just jamming his fingers up inside them, being like, ah, not tight enough. Like,
she's
right. Like, so fucking weird.
It was just absolutely had to be traumatizing for Diana, like the whole entire thing.
Yeah.
Terrible. It's so awkward, the actual sex itself. Yeah. And then he makes it a million times worse when he tries to get involved. He like grabs her throat, like is trying to whisper in her ear, like, this guy's dirty, like, you're beautiful, like, life's about balance.
And then he licks her. Dude, she's fucking like Pigpen from Charlie Brown. And then like, literally, the dude that just always has a cloud of dirt.
He just hard DPs her, and it's just like, all right, she's done. Yes. Like, her mentality's going to be wrecked.
And, I mean, Paul would say this if he was here. It's way too easy for him to DP her. He just, like, walks up, no preparation, just sticks her right in the ass.
Yeah, you're right. Shout out, Paul.
That's some bullshit.
Keeping the spirit alive.
But I think that's pretty – you see her, like, starting to break down that and stuff, and that's pretty much the end of that.
That might be the worst thing that we've seen.
Oh, yeah.
Like, traumatizing-wise, because obviously we've seen people die and get killed, but that was awful.
There's been some bad ones, but this is –
We did see a guy get his cock chopped off and crucified. So,
for attempted murder,
he deserved it though. Deanna was just
don't try
innocent.
To kill our boy Spartacus,
man. You know? I had a harder time watching when Dagan pissed on the one dude earlier this season than I did with the dude with Sagabak.
Yeah.
When we saw him actually peeing, like, that was worse than the dick cut off. I thought, but whatever. There is one quick line, because right after Deanna's getting raped and like the whole thing's over, we get Gaia flirting hard with Varys again, and he kind of puts her in her place, saying like, you don't have a family, you don't have land, you have no one. So basically, the idea, because she was always floating the idea, maybe I'll flirt with him, make him my new husband. Mm-hmm. So that gets shut down right there.
Yeah, this whole scene, or I guess two scenes, are just complete L's. They're terrible. I hate them.
I guess we're still talking about the same scene. Like, even when she comes out looking traumatized, you see Navia like give her a smirk. Like,
yeah,
she's
she was like, because they were excited going into it. She was just like, how was it? Said it with her eyes, not her voice. Right. And Deanna just gives her like a shake. Yeah. Like, it was awful. Says it with her eyes.
I literally can't imagine losing my virginity in a worse way.
Nope. Was the gladiator named?
He looked kind of got like the
Neus.
He is named.
Looks kind of like Neus.
I feel so bad that I don't know it off the top of my head. Starts with an R or something, I think.
Raskus?
Isn't it Rask? Wasn't that Raskus?
Same guy. Huh? I think it was actually.
Is it Raskus that bangs her later? Because Raskus bangs her at one point, I think. I'm like 99%
sure. Yeah, I can't remember, but I know Raskus definitely was one of those.
It was either that or in the next episode when they're doing the whole orgy scene. But either way.
Okay, so
now we can go back.
TLDR, the weird guy sucks.
Yeah,
Custodius. His name
isn't even worth coming out of my mouth.
Yeah. Jesus.
Okay, we are jumping all over the place, but we're gonna go back to now Quintus and Salonius and Markets. This is right on the heels of Badiatis being sent out of the Tullius and Titus meeting, and he runs into good Salonius,
just sauntering around the marketplace.
And they're like kind of making amends. They're just kind of, you know, talking it out right now, and Quintus isn't like really pissed, but even as they reconcile, quote unquote, he's still a little bit upset, like a little bit angry with Salonius.
In a vacuum, though, it didn't feel that malicious.
No, it didn't. He was just like, you're my friend, and it seems like you're aligning with Tullius, who pissed on me. Like, I don't like that, but no, they're still good. They're still
There's
friends.
There's a bit of a misunderstanding, because he's mad at him for running to his dad and ratting him out. And Salonius thinks he's mad at him for aligning with Tullius.
Yeah.
And he's like, I just carried a message. And Badiatis is like, you carried but shit spewed from an errant hole. I was just like, dude, if my friend ever talked to me like that.
Yeah. I'll talk to you like that later.
Away with words.
Yeah. I mean, Salonius says to him, like, I was just basically looking for advice because, like, you're trying to go out here and go toe to toe with Tullius.
Yeah.
And Vettius, and like, we can't handle that.
And he even says, like, I didn't expect him to come home, you know, come back.
Which, again, to me, says, like, Salonius is still not
good.
He's still good.
I still love good Salonius. He is just like the voice of reason in Badiatis's ear at this point. Something's going to click, and I can't wait for it. But anyway, so after they reconcile, they reconvene with Tullius and Titus, who are coming out of their one-on-one meeting. Titus kind of belittles Salonius by saying, I hardly recognize you. The days weigh heavy on a man, do they not? And Salonius is just like, what the fuck? You call me old, bro?
Yeah, right?
Oh, dude, Papa B is such a pussy pushover when it
comes
to
Tullius,
man.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It didn't... Okay, he's respectful business because he gets walked all over. Like, dude, fuck
it's him. Literally Tullius is saying to Badiatis what I was trying to get at earlier is, I miss your dad because I can walk all over him, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so Tullius puts his arm around Salonius and says, let's review recent events. So Salonius now has, you know, him and Tullius are on speaking terms.
That's like not that. Nothing.
He's becoming Tullius's guy.
Salonius is also, it seems, aware that Bodiatus is now aware that this is closer than, you know, like he right. didn't want Tullius to do this in front of Bodiatus at all.
Tullius knows exactly. I don't think
100%. Salonius is all about it either, though. I think he's letting this allegiance to Tullius grow bigger than he anticipated, wherein he was just looking out for his and honestly Bodiatus's best interest.
This could also be seen as a smart move from Tullius to piss off young Bodiatus even more. Like, this could be purposeful. Like, he didn't care about Salonius. He was
are we talking about layers right now? The layers to this movie.
Layers.
Don't you dare. Cutting onions. Don't you dare.
Okay, so after that. So Tullius and Salonius, good Salonius, walk away, and then we get Titus alone with Quintus, and essentially he says, this is how we get into Tullius's good graces again. Gannicus will yield the primus, you will relay that he got injured, and that Vettius is more than capable of fulfilling gladiatorial needs to Varus, so he'll communicate that Gannicus can no longer fight in the primus. And Bodiatus says, how can you ask me to essentially kiss the ass of Vettius who wronged me? Do you have the actual quote, Kyle?
Yeah, you want me to tongue the boy's ass.
Yeah, way better.
And then he looks at him and says, I ask nothing, only how it shall be.
Yeah. So he says, we do have fights that are going to happen after midday. So they do get important matchups, but you're...
Because of the after midday
right.
line.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's a good catch.
The men of House Bodiatus will have to fight themselves. So we get our matchups dropped right here. It's going to be Barca versus Neus. And then it's going to be Auctus versus Crixus. And Auctus is Barca's significant other.
Right, right.
And let me jump in real quick because I want to ask you two guys, like, when you heard that, what were your initial thoughts about, like, because I was a little confused about how he was so, like, mad at the fact that he had to have his own people fight against each other. But in season one, like, the actual first Blood and Sand, there's, like, a couple of situations where it's all just, like, his own men. Isn't that one? Like, Spartacus versus Crixus, the first time when he gives Missio, like, he wasn't pissed that he was just putting his own men up against each other. I just thought that was a weird – I thought it – because I just assumed that it was normal. Sometimes you just field men and you get paid. And
he could have just learned.
I mean, I took it in the way where it's, like, I had the primus. Now, all of a sudden, I'm going to lose possibly two of my guys.
That's better. Yeah.
Probably two of my guys, I would say. Like, he's thinking, he's losing two guys.
I mean, he knows. Like, I mean, he says, like, Crixus doesn't even have the mark. So he's going to be like, he's thinking, all right, well, I just freaking lost Crixus.
Mm-hmm. It was also his guy.
Right.
Yeah.
And he also
caused all the drama between Tullius and, like, his buying purchasing of Crixus caused this whole thing.
Well, Crixus is in the fight in the first place.
Just gonna ask, you think it was Papa B who said that, or
Papa B even comments, like, this is what happens when you know all the shit that you did to get Crixus, this is him it's coming back to bite
you gotta start talking.
I'm sure he would be even happier to have Crixus be in the death match because he's not even a real gladiator. He probably thinks nothing
absolutely
of
yeah he's absolutely. Literally saying, like, all right, you spent all this money, now you're not even gonna get to train him because he doesn't have the mark, and we're gonna kill him now. You know, like,
Well, what did you think about Barca-Neus matchup?
So this is Neus pre-net.
Yeah.
And, I mean, obviously, we know Neus survives, but
Barca's
going to win.
Up,
yeah,
dude.
I was going
to fuck him up. Although, we'll get to the fight later. Yeah. I don't want to talk about it. I knew Barca was going to win right when I heard
the
matchup.
Me
okay,
too.
But
not because I knew he was alive. Even if Barca wasn't in Blood and Sand, I would have been like, Barca's going to beat Neus.
Yeah. Because at this point, Barca's, like, number two.
Yeah, he's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
He might be literally number two.
Now that Animaeus is not a gladiator.
Because Animaeus is not no longer a gladiator. Exactly.
And then, isn't his significant other I forget his name. Isn't he supposed to be pretty
high
up? Yeah. He is one of Papa B's, like, groomed him.
Okay, so his name is Auctus Hoplomactus?
No, that's the style? That's the style of fighting.
Okay, yeah. Okay, gotcha. And that's interesting. I feel like this was the first episode where, when they were announcing gladiators' names, they did it like four times in these two episodes. They followed it with their Mermillo, their
shout out Athena.
Athena.
I even wrote it in my notes too. They talk about it when we got there.
I agree. I wish they kind of did that in season one because it would have been cooler just knowing the fighting styles and stuff like that. And if they made it more obvious, because, like, you know, I thought it was his last name when I first heard it, and I was like, that doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
They don't have last names.
Right.
It does make sense. But, yeah, never mind. So
hold on, as they're walking out, the funny scene happens when, you know, like Papa B walks away after this confrontation with the son, and like,
oh, yeah,
yeah, Vadiatis turns and just fucking pops the slave that the big black slave that was with him,
yeah,
who was there in place of Barca,
yeah,
which I just thought was
who
funny.
Would he's literally like, kill Vadiatis yeah, if he has God, to take yeah. it.
I just thought that was funny.
I was cracking up. Yeah. At that.
Okay, so this is when chronologically we get the Varus, Gaia, and Lucretia stuff. So we already covered that. The next scene that we haven't talked about is
Barca and
it's,
Asher.
It's in the cells. So Barca and Auctus have like kind of a sex scene, and then it's Asher and Auctus. Asher ate the pigeons is essentially
dude,
what happened.
Dude, that was crazy.
Asher and Dagon.
Man, what did you think was going to happen if they did that? Like, Jesus, man.
Dude,
like,
I would expect death if yeah. I'm Asher. Yes. Like, to do that to Barca? Are yeah. you kidding me?
But
that's what he wants, though.
Well,
I mean,
yeah,
he wants to
yeah.
kill them.
He wants to have the fight go down to show that he can fight, you know? Like, but
dude, I thought this scene was so well done because, yeah. like, Barca and Auctus are just, you know, pissed. And they just roll up and, you know, you see Asher eating the,
yeah.
the pigeons like chicken
yep.
wings.
Bones
and
on the
just
table.
Kinda, he's, like, ready. He just slams it down. They all stand up like the slow motion kit. Dude, epic.
Honestly,
I thought that was awesome.
Barca and Auctus were asking for it because they kept doing the fucking piss in the pudding thing. And
no
they,
doubt.
Were, they said, like, they were well within their rights. Honestly, they said, like, we can't eat the porridge. We had to get creative, something like that. So, yeah,
oh,
honestly, I
love
didn't...
that scene, dude.
Yeah, so did so I. But Gannicus gets involved, too. Like,
I like how they pan to him, and he just kind of smiles.
yeah, he's just yeah. watching yeah. them fight like, all right.
Yeah. yeah.
Dagon did a good job of holding his own in this.
He's a beast.
Well, we find out later.
Dagon's a very good fighter.
He's a house.
I mean, not a homie, but he's a great
yeah,
fighter.
Yeah.
yeah.
Describing that.
So it turns into a Ludus wide scrum, and then Titus shows up at like the worst possible.
Bro,
am I? Okay.
Yeah, because there's another important scene here where it's literally just the four of them right away, right?
Right.
So Gannicus is laughing his ass off. He only gets involved after Animaeus takes a hit.
Yeah, right.
Like he's
exactly.
like he's like, I'm just gonna watch let this
yeah.
happen.
Dagon
you know?
Accidentally elbows.
Exactly.
Him.
And then Gannicus yeah. throws the fucking gloves down, which yeah. is dope. But then another quick thing that happens is like Asher mid fight says, like, Crixus, like
yep.
jump in, help us out. And you know, rightfully so, I will say Crixus turned away.
Yeah,
because, he says this is between brothers and I'm not yeah. a brother.
Rightfully so.
Yep.
Yeah, there's 100%. No bad blood there. For Asher shouldn't feel bad about
he
that.
Stayed
at
neutral.
All.
He stayed neutral.
He's being a dick all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Crixus, you know?
Yeah. Sad part about what's going on at this point in the storyline and episode is that Papa B would love Crixus if he knew Crixus.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
1,000%. Yeah. And then the last thing before Titus shows up is one thing I just noticed was the medic, a young medicus
yeah.
with the one arm.
Yeah.
I don't even know if he's had a scene yet.
I did not catch
he
that.
Not
oh,
noticed.
Dude, he's got his one arm. He's like,
yeah,
yeah he's like raising his one arm.
That's
there,
hilarious.
Rooting, dude.
Yeah,
fist pumping without the fist.
Yeah, yeah. I mean that's so a lot of probably a lot of action for him.
Yeah,
that was funny.
Yeah, that was a great whole scene, man. And then that's when Doctori takes the elbow, and then Titus walks in.
Yeah, Titus walks into a Ludus on fire and essentially just says, you know, you're bringing shame on the house, and to add insult to injury, like, he breaks the news that Gannicus isn't going to fight in the Primus and that two pairings have to fight each other, and he tells them what the pairings are, so Barca and Neus know, and Auctus and Crixus know that they're going to be fighting in the games.
And the reason that hurts Gannicus, besides the idea of the fact that he's not going to, you know, fight in the Primus, is because now he knows that he betrayed his best friend and banged Melita for nothing.
He gives up all the cards. He looks right up in Melita.
He does. Yeah, he does.
yeah.
Not that anyone would
yeah,
know.
Yeah, no, because because Lucretia and them are up there too. But it's just,
So actually, I think they find out in the gladiator bathhouse, like they have that piece of paper that tells them the pairing. So I jumped the gun on that a little bit.
Yeah.
Does anything happen in the bathhouse that's relevant? I think they just confront each other. Neus is like, oh, I'll have you, Barca.
Neus is hype.
Yeah,
yeah
he
yeah,
is.
Neus is hype.
And Crixus kind of says, you know, I don't deserve this. He's talking.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, that's another thing about Crixus' character. He's like, I want this bad, but I don't deserve it yet. I'm
yeah.
not, you know, I'm not
Gannicus
a brother.
Has a nice line in response, though. When he looks at him and he says, you know, life's all about like basically like the how you judge a man is how like he deals with the blessings that he doesn't believe he's earned.
Right.
Which is, I don't know if I agree with that, but that's just interesting.
Like
a very
that.
Serious
yeah,
quote
like
from Gannicus.
Mm-hmm. I love that guy, Gannicus.
Such a good guy.
It's my new password on my laptop.
And by the way, nice. Quick rewind. It was Raskos. I have in my notes. It was Raskos that was picked.
Okay.
So you're, you're right, Luke.
Okay, cool. And then I think the only other thing we get this night is we actually get the cool-ass tiny moment of out in the actual yard at night. You see Animaeus or Doctore practicing his whip. And like Gannicus is kind of standing behind him, looking like he's going to say something to him. But then he's like, he just kind of drops and goes back to his quarters. So,
which I think shows a breakdown in the relationship, because episode, is it one or two, Gannicus, the roles are reversed. Gannicus is out there being a, being a dumbass, and Doctore walks up to him.
What is it? Hold on.
My cock.
My cock rages on.
And Doctore actually walks up to him and tries to talk to him.
Yeah.
But Gannicus now, in his own head, because Doctore doesn't feel any awkwardness, it's like, eh, can't do it.
And it's weird because Doctore is taking all of this as a sign of, you know, because he got promoted.
Yeah, I mean, I think we glossed over that earlier, but he says to Melita, like, Gannicus doesn't like me anymore, pretty much, because I'm Doctore. I'm not a, you know, I'm not an equal brother.
Yeah, and she tries to cover the tracks pretty well, you know.
Yeah.
Talking in metaphors and shit, as they do.
So, moving right along, we get
the pregame.
Yeah, the pregame. I love how, did we know that they get those capes if they're the ones selected for the games? They're
no, so cool. But I like them.
Yeah, they're so cool.
Yeah,
They're just little shawls. I love it.
Another question for you guys, the Rooks, that I wanted to ask is, because Gannicus starts going down the line, you know, saying, you know, I guess it's just because he's champion, he's so well-respected and stuff. He's like, you know, brotherhood shaking with Barca, Octus, and Neus.
Yeah.
And then he gets to Crixus. And honestly, what did you take when he looks at Crixus and nods? Was that a sign of respect for a non-brother, or was that a slight that was meant to be like, I can't touch you? Like, you're still
sign
beneath.
Of respect.
That's what I took.
That was like, he can't.
Right?
I agree.
I said it earlier, brothers can't show that they like non-brothers that don't have the mark, but like, that's how he can show it without
respect.
Yeah, I definitely took it like that, too.
Because I felt like my future knowledge affected of what I thought in the moment. So if you guys saying that makes me feel better, because I totally was just like, fuck 100%. Yeah, Gannicus is just all in on Crixus now. Like,
I mean, he knows, he like you said in the first episode we just did, that he could have killed Crixus in a real fight during their exhibition if he wanted to. But you have that kind of fight with him as the champion, he's going to respect you. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of how I took it.
Yeah.
So we have the games, and first up is going to be. Go ahead.
I just want to say, because I really like the Battiatus and his dad dynamic, because Battiatus' dad, well, A, this is when he turns into the jolly old man, because Lucretius is like, oh, you want the honeyed wine? He's like, oh, you want to like get over on me with the honey wine? And then he cracks. He's like, oh, you know, I like it.
Yeah. Remember that.
And then he says, like, he says something bad about Crixus, and then basically he lays down the gauntlet to Battiatus, like, it's my man versus your man. Like, we'll see what method basically comes out on top.
Well, we brought this up last episode. We haven't brought it up yet, and it's going to be coming more during this whole thing. But again, with the open mouth stuff from Crixus this whole time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what he says is he's looking shabby. Like, he's looking – because he does, man. I mean, and they say it's because he's been training so hard, which, again, that's our boy. But – yeah, he looks like he's ragged and dying walking out to before we get to the
you'll never hear
pre-game.
My man complaining, though.
No.
Grind.
No way.
Okay. First ballot Hall of Fame, Gruden Grinder.
Oh, that he is. That he is. Okay, so moving forward to the games. And first up, we have Barca versus Neus. Really cool fight, actually.
Yeah, very good.
So the styles we have here.
Well, hold on. Before they get into that, we do get the first conversation between Crixus and Battiatus, right? Or does that happen after? Is it go right into the fight, or is it?
We open up.
It goes right into the fight.
No, it gets cut, happening concurrently, and then it goes back.
The fight starts. They go under the sand, and then they go back up to the sand.
It jumps around.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, just quickly covering the conversation. All it is really
pumped
Doctore up. Tells Crixus to fight with honor, and if need be, die with honor. He says, thank the gods you may die with honor, too.
Yeah.
And then
subpar
oh my God.
Pep talk, and then Battiatus comes through.
I didn't take notes because I was just loving every word that was coming out of Battiatus's mouth.
Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
I just, my note is Quintus and Crixus share a fucking amazing moment where he essentially says, I saw something in you, that's why I bought you, like, I don't believe you're going to die today, Crixus. You have the blood of a champion, this, that, and the other thing.
Oh.
I was just like, oh, my God. This is awesome.
Yeah.
This is his first fight. Like, he doesn't even have the mark, and he's just getting thrown against Octus, who, like, in the past 20 minutes, they just spent hyping him up.
Yeah.
Like, they very, in a short period of time, put him from Barca's, like, number two guy to
a top tier body,
a top tier fighter in House Body Otis. Yeah,
and he totally is. I can buy that. And but I agree with you. I wrote down like pretty good pump up speech for Body.
Yeah,
Otis.
Exactly.
Oh my god.
Well, the blood of the champion's sick because that's the first time Crixus gets donned with that, you know, attribute, and then later on we find out that Crixus is banging Body Otis's wife, who gave him that attribute, and then Lucretia says it to Crixus that she has the blood of a champion inside of him.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I think the last thing he says to him is great because he says, "See's fucking glory and see both of us proven worthy." And then let's go.
Let's go, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So now we fight, we the get the Barca one. Versus Neus fight. And it is Barca has the spear and mini shield. Do you guys know the name of that style? It's the Hoplomactus because it's the same as Octus. Yeah, so yeah, he has the spear and mini shield, which
with
is Hoplomactus.
With the little blade in the left hand of the mini shield. Yeah.
And Neus is fighting Mermillo style, so he has the giant like square shield in one hand and then just like a bastard sword, I guess you would say, like the one hand sword in the other.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I just love the different
styles.
Dude,
Barca was a fucking animal. I always say it, like Barca's one of my favorite characters. Like, he's just so cool. I mean, besides all the over the top grabbing cock stuff, he's definitely just like funny, and he's just like good fighter. Like, I like Barca.
So this fight I didn't think was too memorable because they were flashing to and from, but the climax of it was awesome.
Yeah,
so essentially Neus like lunges at him, but Barca takes kind of draws him in, does a somersault onto his back, and literally what's the name of the
move? It's called a circle throw. Yeah.
Okay. Take
his
throw.
So it's where he takes his foot, puts it in his chest, holds on to his shoulders, and leans back. Oh, I'm trying to stay on the mic here.
Jimmy's about to circle toss the pong table. Yeah.
Leans back and uses the leverage from the ground and pushes up with his foot, and it goes over his head. And that's where you're talking about where he goes into the crowd, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's a circle throw into the crowd. Yeah. Phenomenal.
That was one of the coolest moves like we've seen in this series.
And they actually, quick callback, they do that in the big throwdown with Asher and Dagon and the other. They do have that. I'm not sure who does it, but there's another circle throw. I think that's the first time we see it used.
Yeah.
Dude, you couldn't pay me to be in the front like four rows of a gladiator fight. Like, are you kidding me?
Someone pays for it, I think, in the next episode.
I think that's the nosebleed seats, like the last people get the front.
Yeah, well, Kyle asked us, like, you said it was you, Kyle, right? Or Luke, that said, who expected someone to die in the fight that was in the market? Like, we see that people are getting and there's an actual arena-ish in the way, you know, even though not really, but they're standing, you know, I was expecting like people to be 100%. Chopped in half in the margin.
Isn't this the fight that the girl falls in?
Yeah. And everyone's laughing and stuff.
Like,
yeah.
She's like, oh my God, help me up. And like they come and like slice right under her as she's
but
getting
But then once she's up, she thinks it's like the coolest
she's
thing.
Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Barca has a thrust.
Oh, yeah.
Barca has a thrust that he puts right through like the window, like the viewing seat box window. And it's like if you weren't paying attention, that's going right through your head.
I mean, it's cool too. Like during the fight, you see Octus being like, yeah, my boy, do it. Yeah. Like when he's starting to win, like
the little viewing
other,
holes
man.
They have.
Yeah.
But before we get too into the Crixus and Octus, let's finish this Barca fight. So essentially after getting thrown into the stands, he gets him, just goes in for the kill shot, has a sword to Neus's throat, and then they look up at the grandstands and it's Varus who gets the final say. And he says, you know, they both fought properly. The gods will be most pleased. We will be merciful and grant life. So Neus gets to live.
As we knew.
Yeah. But then Titus, who is in the grandstands as well, Body Otis is not in the grandstands. Titus looks over and says, most generous of you, Senator Varus. Like, thank you so much. And he looks over at Titus with a smirk and says, your house has been more than accommodating. It should be rewarded. And that was just so funny because Titus does not have a clue what that means.
Right.
Very, very good to see Papa B coughing his lungs up. That guy.
Yeah, we love
deserves
to see
a
that.
Little cough.
I was almost thinking, like, I was like, are they going to make him, like, die mid-speech? Because he's giving the speech and he's, like, shaking. He's kind of putting his hands on the rail. Like, he's like all,
It was a nice speech, though.
I thought he was going to fall onto the sand and die right then and there. Right when he coughed, I thought Body Otis poisoned him. That's what I thought Quintus poisoned him.
I just thought he was frail. Like, I don't know if it was poison I was thinking, but I literally just thought he was frail and he's going to be giving the speech. Because he's, Like, he's holding on to the rail like he can't even stand almost. Mm-hmm. And I'm
you guys remember the reason, like, he's sickly, right? Like, it's because it's all about the dust and the climate of Capua.
Right.
Which is why he was in Sicilia the whole time. So, you know, just specifically the arena dust, like, all that shit would be terrible for you anyway.
But. Right.
Yeah, so anyway, Varus lets Titus announce the next fight, which is going to be Crixus versus Octus. And Titus says, you know, a virgin on the sands, I give you Crixus Mermillo. And I had shades of SpongeBob when Squidward wins the trophy and says, Squidward Tortellini. I thought that's how he liked pronouncing it. Crixus Mermillo. That was just me. Versus.
Yeah, Octus. That was definitely just
me. Yeah, that was just me. But I wanted to get it in there.
Damn, bro, you got some layers over there.
Yeah, well, we knew that about me.
Boy, you got to stop.
I think the first sight we get of Crixus is where open mouth again. He like walks out.
Yeah, like, it's like, and he doesn't do that at all in the first season. I know. I'm like, what did they ask? Did they tell Manu Bennett, like, open the mouth a little bit. That's good acting. Like,
dude,
like
I Trout or something. That's something I always remembered about thinking about season two was Crixus like looking like that with long hair.
So yeah, but here we go with Crixus versus Octus. And right away Octus gets two nice chest slashes in and Crixus lands a thigh shot. So they're doing the dance.
Yeah, Crixus is dealing with the spear well, like the first spear move, but it keeps getting caught by the short blade.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We get a little slice by, I think it's Crixus's blood that goes like, they just.
Into the crowd.
Right into the dude's mouth in the crowd. You see it like on his teeth and stuff.
He's like,
loving it.
Love making the crowd like a scene piece.
Lack of flash and some.
Yeah, not enough titties in the crowd for my liking, but.
So it's a lot of back and forth. They're exchanging blows. Octus gets Crixus on the ground with only his shield to protect him. And he does essentially a Superman running start and lunge in and just like plants his spear into the shield.
Slow motion. I love all their slow motion stuff.
But it gets stuck there. Crixus, you know, puts the shield to his left and slices through the spear. Yep. So he gets the spear out of the equation.
Just like he was taught.
Yep.
Just like Ganicus told him.
He has the spear, like, he's such good in the moment, like high pressure decision making.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He just learns everything. Like he's so good at embodying the lessons he learns when we see him physically training on the screen.
Yeah.
But I think right after that scene, I mean, right after that part where he cuts the stuff, doesn't he take off Octus's helmet?
Yeah, and
that
uses it as
was awesome.
A secondary weapon because he was disarmed with his shield.
Yes, he was like blocking with it and slapping with it. I was loving every part of that.
So where we're at right now, Crixus is holding his mini sword and a mini shield. Or I'm sorry, Octus has mini sword and mini shield. Crixus has this mini sword and the helmet from Octus.
Helmet,
right.
And they're exchanging blows again. This was an awesome fight.
Yes, it was a very good fight. Yeah.
Barca, like the whole time, he's hyped that
Octus
is
just
winning.
Like, they're pumped for each other, man.
So they're exchanging blows and then they kind of get closer. And right as Octus, it looks like he's charging up for like a finishing blow. Like it doesn't. You don't see it in the field of view, but Octus kind of goes, stops, and he gets sliced through his chest. And Crixus has his freaking moment, too.
Baby.
He's like awestruck. Like, this is the arena. This is, you know, he's after glory and honor.
He does his famous, like, Crixus scream in the arena.
Yeah.
I had chills on every part of my body.
Everyone's so hyped there, too.
Yeah. I had the goosebumps, too, dude. This is just the origins of Crixus, and I couldn't have painted it any better. Oh, my God. Pre-Mark of the Brotherhood. This was him earning his mark.
Dude. Yeah.
Asher and Dagon did it the wrong way, dude. He did it the right way.
Oh, hell yeah.
Crixus
couldn't do the test because you have to – no, I guess he could have done – like the test, the sparring test, like we see in the first season.
He would have.
Yeah, but this way is better.
That would have been in his inevitable path, but he just got pushed into death.
Yeah. This way is better, though.
Oh my God, this way is
and
so
also Octus
better.
In death. I mean, a good loser in death, because he whispers in his ear. He says, Bark has taught you well.
Yeah. And dude, okay, to ruin the mood a little bit, sadden it a little bit, is like when he kind of rolls over and makes just like straight eye contact with Barca and just passes away. Like, Barca's actor did a great job right there too with his just facial expressions and stuff
and he continues it too.
Barca's had some loss in his life, man.
It's unfortunate, but it's all love between it's all love still between Barca, Crixus, and Octus. Barca understands, but he's just sad. He doesn't blame me,
which definitely is feeding into your point about how Crixus doesn't have the mark, but they all still respect him.
Dude, he knows, and everybody knows to beat Arctis, that's no fluke at this point.
We're not,
like,
hold on, before we get, we that's next episode. When we're
Okay.
I have a lot to say on that.
So anyway,
final scene back at the Ludus.
Crixus is getting the mark. Okay, yeah, Crixus is getting the mark, and Gaia and Lucretia comment. Gaia says perhaps Crixus will be a match for Gannicus someday, but in and out of the arena, and then it pans to Lucretia, who we all know will, boy, they have their
She has no idea.
She has no idea. And yeah, Barca does approach Crixus and say, you fought well, brother, and that's the only words that are exchanged. Yep. That's all that needs to be said. Yep. He goes in, acknowledges it, and dips.
They get something in that next episode, but that just speaks volumes to the kind of person that Barca is.
No bad blood.
Yeah.
Sad, but no bad blood.
And that's even more epic to know what their relationship becomes.
Right.
Like how he never, like, you know, like, he's never in love with Crixus, but he treats Crixus as like his best brother ever after some time of him being the champion
the whole time, because obviously once the fight was announced, I kind of put together that Crixus was going to kill Arctis. I was just thinking, like, in Blood and Sand, Barca always had Crixus's back. Mm-hmm. Like, he was very respectful of him as the champion of Capua. So it speaks volumes to Barca. You're right. And I'm starting to really love Barca as a character, too. Dude,
Barca and Crixus, first two in the fantasy draft, 100%.
Oh yeah, if you're
a Lanista and you're a Lanista, honor, you want those two.
Yeah,
you want our doctors.
You want to talk about locker room guys? We got fucking Crixus
and
Barca.
Those are the top three draft picks in the fantasy gladiators.
Okay, so then we get last scene of the episode is going to be Titus and Quintus. Titus says, "It would appear I underestimated Crixus as I did my own son." So he's conceding. He says, "Good on you, Badiatis," or Quintus, like, the goal came to play.
Yep.
First time he ever put some respect on Quintus's name since we've seen him. So.
Bullshit, dude. He's been grinding for that respect.
And he still says to him, like, whatever you, like, Crixus did well, blah, 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 but, like, chill out with the plots and the schemes.
Yeah. He says, removed from plots and schemes, like, you're good. And he said, thoughts far removed, never to return. And I just thought of all the shit he's about to do.
I mean, the look, like, at the end of this scene. Decade. He says, his dad says he's going to stay because, like us, he loved the Crixus W. Yeah. And he walks away, and Biotis gives him that look. And I literally wrote down, he's definitely plotting to kill him.
He's definitely scheming.
The stink guy, dude. He is just plotting and scheming.
I wrote down, Papa B really can't read the room with that look.
No, not at all.
Going right over his head. All right, so that's episode 3, and we're going to move right into episode 4, entitled Beneath the Mask. And this was another good one. My God, aren't they all?
Yeah.
Did that Beneath the Mask title give you any flashbacks to Olympia?
Are we having another masquerade party, sex party here, or what?
Boy, are we. Parallels get real, because this is, for me, one of the saddest episodes of the series.
Yeah, my gosh.
The series?
I like that.
Yeah.
So
I was not looking forward to the end of this episode, but go ahead.
Yeah, as a vet, I can see that. Just knowing what's going to happen.
The beginning is super hot fire.
Oh, yeah, it is. I'm going to start spitting some of that wicked hot fire. So we're going, the camera is going through the marketplace into the arena. And we find out that it's Papa B and Quintus are just looking at the fights for the day. And it's the first time we see a guy with a trident and a net. We find out that the style is called Retiarius.
Yep.
Retiarius.
I'm glad you called that because I tried to re-listen to it multiple times and couldn't catch it.
I took the note because I wanted to make sure one of us took the note of what the name of the style was, because we've forgotten some of the Latin names of stuff. But yeah, so
we do get a really cool conversation here, because I alluded to it in season one. I forget what episode it was when I was talking to you guys, saying, like, there's a reason that Neus uses the net and trident. I remember saying that to you guys.
100%.
I was waiting for it.
Yeah.
And
it's
we
cool.
See
it's
it
a pawned. Cool way, right?
Yeah, because we see it pawned on him later.
And I love, too, how they – I mean, we'll get to it, but they say, like, oh, just put it on someone who's lower, who's not doing –
That's this conversation.
Okay,
it?
Yeah. And then, obviously, Neus becomes, like, the number two in season one or number three or whatever.
So this is kind of a good scene for Badiatis and Titus, because – Titus essentially says, I don't want to be in the stands. I want to be closer to the action, like here with the citizens. But he's kind of talking shit on the new style. He says he favors the Murmillo. But Quintus says the crowd loves it. And soon enough, there will be someone from this Ready Arias style in every single game. Mm-hmm. And if you're a Leanista who owns a Ludus without one, you're going to be left in the dust. Yeah,
he truly does have fucking head.
I was just
dude, this is just the old head.
It's
versus
the boomer personality.
It's the boomer
that you said.
Versus the zoomer. Yeah. Dude, it's just
I love it. I love the dynamic.
But I love that Body Otis kind of won him respect with that Crixus versus Octus situation. And now he's listening to him. He's reaching out.
Titus has a really positive episode, and I hate to admit that. Until the end, he's just like nicer this whole episode, and he's just like his attitude shifted because he doesn't think there's some shicey shit going on in the background. So he's
little does he know.
He thinks he squashed it already. Like, whatever.
Oh my god, you wanna talk about zoomers, man? Just throwing orgies at the house while the old man's away. My god,
hell yeah,
yeah. My god, so yeah,
what were we talking about?
We all just kind of like got lost in nostalgia, huh?
So essentially we get Asher and Deegan next, right?
That's what this conversation leads to.
They're watching, they're there to watch.
You're right, yeah, right.
The opposite of a pep talk from Doc Touré.
Oh my god,
he sucks at pep talks.
I have the whole thing here. He said, repeat my words in speech that Deegan can understand. You bear the mark of the brotherhood and an honor you have not earned. Your true test awaits you. Live and count yourself among us. Die and prove yourselves as unworthy as I suspect.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow, dude. Like, even Animaeus is telling them like it is. Yep. Like, usually I would think he would at least be encouraging, like, win this house, Body Otis, and be short about it. But he just said, go and prove me right. You guys aren't shit.
Yeah.
I don't know if Doc Touré has been Doc Touré long enough to know how to pep talk yet.
That's
so
true.
I think he's just learning how to do it. But there's a little bit of a translation scheme going on here by Asher. You're seeing like he hasn't been perfectly translating to Deegan really at all this season.
Yeah.
But like it's starting to divert in a meaningful way now. Mm-hmm. Like he's saying things to him to basically change his attitude about like Doc Touré,
right,
like what's gonna happen if they win this fight and stuff. And you know, Asher also does the courtesy of never actually retranslating what Deegan says, because he's always like, I'm gonna fuck you or I'm gonna kill you.
Too that he's keeping Deegan tied to him.
I also like how you say translate, but they don't know that word translate, so they just go around it in their language with whatever they're gonna say. It's just funny.
Speak the word
and transform it to what he can understand.
Yeah, speak words that he can understand.
He basically
speaks
the definition of the word translate.
Yeah.
Yes. Just so then we get the fight. Well, before the fight, you can see Asher's into it. He says, don't worry, the fierce Asher will bring glory to the house. And I was just like, it's just sad now, guys.
This fucking
guy. Go out and do your business. Walk the walk before you talk the talk.
But the thing is, that's a genuine desire of his. Like, when we know that from the first season. Like, he actually wants to be a glory.
That's why it's so tough, man. We've all watched Blue Mountain State. Do you remember the one episode with the dude who's like dad is a booster and just buys his way onto the team? It's like Rudy, but everybody hates him. Mm-hmm. I just think Asher's this dude in the Ludus.
Damn.
If you haven't seen Blue Mountain State, that is a horrible thing to say to someone or about someone. But
you should watch that show then.
Yeah. It's, oh my God, binge with us? Rooks and Vets? We're all Vets.
We invented titty sucking.
I'm a Rook, actually. We can do it.
Say less. Okay, right. We're going to have to talk off the sidebar off the pod. Anyway, it's a 2v2 battle. It's Asher and Deegan versus two nobodies. We get their names later, but they're nobodies. Asher gets murked. Deegan takes it to his guy, takes care of business. Asher gets, he's about to die. And before his opponent can deal the final blow, Deegan stabs the dude in the back. And Asher gets up, talking this shit, saying, this is what happens to anybody who, you know, faces Asher.
Yeah.
This hurt my heart.
Because he's the one that actually, you know, like, Deegan hurts the dude and basically puts him on life. Like, he's going to die. And Asher goes up and executes the shit out of him. To try and act like he claimed that win.
This one really hurt my heart, man. Because, like, I wanted Asher to be, like, I mean, we'll see if he has any other fights, but I want him to be, like, competent. He's doing the whole, I'm getting my ass kicked and I'm going to brag in the wrong. Now I don't like that. There's a lot of things that make him a villain and it's the character traits that I like for entertainment wise, but this is just a straight, like, I don't like it.
But doesn't it make you feel a little more justified about how all the other gladiators treat him in season one? Like,
you're, oh yeah, that's, yeah, 100%.
I almost didn't want it to be justified. I wish that Asher was a competent gladiator. I think that would have made it. He's not a good gladiator, which makes him nothing, which makes he has no redeemable qualities other than that he's a good talker.
Yeah, I don't know what else is left for two more episodes, but I mean, this makes it even more relevant when he tries to tell Badiatis, like, I had some glories in my day. And he's like, nah.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so,
nothing anyone will remember.
I just really wanted it to be like, you know, he was pretty good. I didn't need him to be like Spartacus or Gannicus or anything, but I wanted him to be good and then like get hurt and then it kind of, you know, they made fun of him and hurt his, you know.
They knew what they were doing. They knew what they were doing.
Damn. So, anyway, we got Papa B and Quintus in the stands. Papa B says the man assumes credit of his betters, essentially saying he's taking credit for what Dagon did. And Badiatis says, oh, he's just swept up in the moment. So Badiatis kind of defends him. But next, we have Vettius making presentation of his newly acquired gladiator. The darkest thing east of the Rhine is where he's from. Cabarrus Mermillo. So it's another Mermillo fighter. And yeah, they just watched this fight, but the crowd really, really loves this dude. And it's another Papa B. He's kind of warning patience against Vettius, because the fact that the crowd likes Vettius' new guy is kind of ruffling Quintus's feathers. Right. So Papa B is just warning patience. Just, you know, he's got Tullius under his wing, you know, just be patient with
him. This raised a question for me that I want to ask you guys. Basically, Papa B says to Badiatis, like, you're, you know, like, all this shady thinking you have and reaching for these heights is the reason, like, we can't do this. Like, basically can't do this. But my whole thing was, like, why is, like, reaching for being in the opening games of the new arena, like, ambitious? And, like, how many Lanistas are there in Capua that this is ridiculous to assume that Badiatis deserves a man in the opening games? Like, he has, like, the coolest mountaintop, I guarantee, out of any of them. Like, what? Like, why wouldn't he be a little bit into the idea of getting a place into the opening games?
And I completely agreed, like, that should be the aspiration of all Lanistas in Capua. And the logistics of it, there can't be more than a dozen in the one small city of Capua. Like, that should be their aspiration. So I think it's more just, he's a boomer, dude. He's set his ways, 100%. And he's pretty satisfied with where he's been able to climb in his lifetime, establishing the house and raising it to where it is now. But Badiatis is young, hungry. He's ready to scrap.
Is he really young, though? Because he's only 5 years removed from, like, in 5 years, it's a season one. Like,
younger. Still has a lot of adulthood left, I would say.
It's nice to see that, like, this is the exact criticism that's leveled at his dad during season one when he's been dead.
Yeah.
And what you just said is what Badiatis says in season one. It's just, I don't know. I just really like the prequel relationship between the two of them. We get to see it in, like, person and them actually interact.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Also in that fight, I don't know if you guys caught it, the new Mermillo of Vettius's fight, there was an awful CGI sequence wherein he hit the shield and there was like a full second delay and then he bounced
and he flew
to the
left. Like he's on a rope.
It was bad. Awful. It was like a full second.
Right,
it was just like Crixus's jump that ends the Gannicus fight. And he just like hovers and
literally
drops.
He just like glitched.
Yeah.
I was surprised like that made it through however many rounds of Reddit. They probably had it done. They were just like, fuck it. They didn't want to do the stunt again.
Damn, I need to see that.
And then he get Cabarrus, right? Is his name?
Yeah.
Rips the guy's heart out.
Oh yeah, he kills it. Yeah.
Throws it at the screen, and that's our transition.
Mm-hmm. Transition to our ladies Lucretia and Gaia in the marketplace. They're talking about Titus.
And well, Gaia does like express like pretty quickly that to Lucretia that she's pretty much done with Capua if Titus is around. So she wants to leave. Like, she's like, I just can't be around this anymore, you know?
Wasn't the reason they weren't in the games, like in the arena, was because Titus was with Badiatis in the stands?
I think so.
Yeah. That's why they're in the market's not watching.
He was a prick to Gaia.
Yeah, definitely. But Lucretia, I guess, is just trying to defend her father-in-law, saying Titus is but an old man set in his ways, which we've been preaching to the choir. Lucretia is a homie. My God. But great. Yeah. And then they get to talking about Gaia and how she's a widow. And she says, you have a husband to protect you. I have nothing, you know. And Lucretia just says, well, we're going to have to remedy that situation. Enter Petronius, who is a
random rich Roman.
Just
man.
Another fancy rich Roman. Boy, they're just a dime a dozen.
No titles.
No titles, yeah. But it's Petronius. Gaia hits on him and name drops Lucretia. And he says, whoa, 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 Lucretia of House Badiatis? I've heard of House Badiatis. Yep. Like, he's. So we got
starts
another.
Praising the House of Kink.
Yeah. Bro, we got another.
They party, baby. Yeah. But just to double back real quickly to your dime a dozen comment is that Guy has a nice line that I'm sure Luke likes when she says, in desperate times, fortune must give way to more assertive means.
Mm. Yeah. So she wants what she wants.
She knew he was going to be there.
Yeah. Of course.
I mean, Petronius, so
funny.
Petronius gives her a little onage too, man. He had no idea who she was pretty much, you know. Yeah.
Second time she's gotten slighted by upper Romans.
And it's only when Lucretia's name, like you said, Brian, that he starts to perk up a little bit.
Yeah, Badiatis is the name that he's interested in. Then next scene we have in the Ludus, Crixus is sparring with Gnaeus.
Asher is just returning with Dagon.
Yeah, to lackluster applause. Like, he comes in hype, you know.
Such a
cocksmack. I forget the names, this name and this name, never to rise again. And we have a couple people doing the golf clap.
People were banging on the shields.
It was like anybody else coming back victorious, they would be so
women and wine.
I just want to stop it right here, but imagine like being one of the gladiators who's not in the games. Imagine it's just like homies, like Barca and Gannicus are getting sent off, not to fight against each other, that's what the hypothetical was here, but like just to fight against someone from other Ludus. Like, you don't know if they're coming back. If you see one of your brothers come back, it's a party. That is, I love the dynamic of the brotherhood. There's just such a bond, man.
It's so good, and you can't really appreciate it until you deep dive into the show like we're doing right now. Like,
oh yeah.
Yeah, it's so awesome.
Mm-hmm. And that's really all we get.
We do see my note just says Crixus having that subtle character growth, because I think he's just like grinding harder than anybody in that scene. Mm-hmm. Like, you see him like working really hard.
I think he's just beating the shit out of Gnaeus. Like, I think he's handling Gnaeus.
And I think,
is this where we get
that's later?
Thank you.
The next thing that happens in this scene is that Doctori basically tells Gannicus to get up off his ass and start training, and then Papa B is like, bring him up top.
Titus wants a word with Gannicus. Titus. He's just asking Gannicus, what's up? Like, you're the champion. Why are you? He's acknowledging that he doesn't have the work ethic expected of a champion. Mm-hmm. He's asking, you think yourself to be better than any man in the arena? He says, in the arena, I am every man's equal. My heart beats for House Badiatis.
It kind of straight faced.
Yeah, he does. Emotion. He said, what is your heart beat for House Badiatis? And then he gets dismissed. And it's just Titus and Quintus talking. And he says, Gannicus speaks, but words I seek to hear. He is no champion of my house. Mm-hmm. Bro, Gannicus is the champion of Bingetown TV's house.
Right.
Man.
Oh my God. Yes.
We don't give a shit what Titus thinks. Gannicus is our champion.
Absolutely.
But Titus doesn't like the champion of Capua.
I mean, he has a point from his perspective.
Yeah, but his perspective don't mean
his
shit.
Perspective sucks, but he has a point from his perspective.
Okay, boomer. That's what Gannicus said. Okay, boomer. I beat someone with a blindfold, and then he just hoofs it.
Yeah, that should be one of the first things that Badiatis said. Like, I put him up against a guy, and he had to blindfold himself, and he still messed him up. Like,
I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to ask me what do the Rooks want to see? I want to see Gannicus fight again. I'm just going to say
now.
It's been too long.
I thought you were about to say
Gannicus
fight Titus. Yeah.
Well, he does fight an old head in this episode, but we'll get to that. Anything else for the Titus and Gannicus talk? Our next scene is our ladies once again.
Scene?
Yep.
Yeah, in the villa. So Lucretia is worried that Titus will find out about essentially the orgies they've been throwing in the escapades that they've been doing to try and accommodate Senator Varus and this, that, and the other thing.
I was pretty surprised that Badiatis comes in and basically they tell him the deal. Like, Gaia is the one who's leading it. And it's like, I'm basically telling him what she plans, and he's not worried at all about the reputation spreading to Titus.
Oh, he's a schemer.
I was cool with that. I was like, that's awesome. I thought Badiatis was going to be a little mad.
All he sees is the opportunity for more favor with more rich Roman people.
Yeah. Yep. That's
all he cares about.
So, yeah, he essentially, Aquinas allows Petronius to come to the villa for more exotic delights with the stipulation that he will take care of his father, like make sure he's not around. And that's the end of that scene. Next, we get Ganicus.
Penis.
We got some penis.
Oh my god! Yeah, this scene opens up with just naked people in the bath.
We did get a lot of penis.
Crixus has a full conversation with just cock in view.
Yeah.
Hell yeah!
Did I miss a scene? Right. I have the next scene is Ganicus and Melita in the cells. Did I miss something?
No, they're just he's in the bathhouse.
Oh, okay.
Where we get the dick, and then he sees her walk by, and then leaves and goes after
follows her. Okay, and they essentially just start talking to each other
cryptically again. Like
Melita says people are going to get suspicious if they see us talking together, and Ganicus says would they not be suspicious if two close friends stop talking to each other out of the blue? And he's right.
Way more right than she is. But no one else fucking knows.
It's because they both know that there's some actual feelings going on, and that's go ahead.
And how many times too, it's like we haven't brought this up, and I think it happens again later. Like Guy just keeps bringing it up, and Lucrece is like, stop, keep it a secret.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
They know what it would do to the whole household if Animaeus actually found out about this. So.
I mean, at this point, that's their doctor against their champion, against their top housemaid. That's disaster.
And I want to bring up the subject to my other rookie, Jimmy, over here. So what, in hindsight, do you think they should have done? Because I think had they laid their cards on the table, like, within hours of the event happening, and they weren't trying to tiptoe around him, they just told him, this happened, we didn't have a choice, we're slaves, we had to have sex, we're telling you right now, as soon as we can, we don't want to lie.
I completely agree. Like, if anyone's going to understand, it's Doc Toure. He knows this works. I'm surprised they didn't, and I thought she might have been the one. I mean, I guess both of them should have thought of that. I mean, why wouldn't you? Because now he's going to find out at some point, and it's going to be an explosion.
I don't know how it's going to come out. I hope that Ganicus finally does tell him, and I thought Ganicus was going to tell him on that Ludus scene where he decides not to talk to him. I guess that was the point of the scene. But
I mean, there's literally nothing that they could have done.
Okay, so we're in agreement that they should have come clean right away.
Yeah, I mean, all it should do to Doc Toure is maybe, obviously, awkwardness, but he would forgive them, I would think, and then he would have problems with Badiatis, Lucretia, whoever, allowed it.
And just to play devil's advocate would be because Badiatis directly gave them the order not to.
Yeah, and that's fair.
Which, if they're defending their decision to having had done it, then they're breaking the reason that they did it by telling him, So that's a good point.
Yeah, that is a good point.
But anyway, so this is the first time that Ganicus verbalizes that there's something to the feelings. He says, yet the thought of you, it proves troublesome. Mm-hmm. Like he, you can tell in his vibe too, like he's kind of a little bit shooketh to his core when he's around Melita or Doc Toure now. And Doc Toure feels the vibe too.
Dude, I really wanted to ask you guys questions in our last episode, but it was so hard for me to do that without leading you to thinking something. So I was just going to, kind of let it go. But it's such a complicated relationship that we see like evolve into what it is in this episode. It was hard to see coming, and it was just whack.
We even touched about, it was either episode one or two where they do actually, bang Melita and Ganicus, but in the actual scene where they're having sex, like they allude when they're getting into the thick of it, like
she's
both enjoying it. There's enjoyment there. Oh, so I think they've been alluding to this conclusion. Yeah. But the next scene, it's kind of going in parallel, is Melita and Doc Toure. So that's her two men. These scenes are like piggybacking on one another. And Doc Toure is just airing out his grievances, says the men no longer accept me as gladiator and don't respect me as Doc Toure. So that's what he's going through right now.
And I think he even says Ganicus isn't even sending him any signs of respect. Like,
That's like the thing that kind of drives it home for him, is that like even Ganicus doesn't respect me.
Yeah. Melita insists essentially that he shows the men he is in complete control, leave nothing up to question. Like, she essentially says, you got to start acting like a doctor and they'll follow suit. Mm-hmm. Like, it's partially your fault for still acting like a gladiator. You're not that anymore. Like, establish your role, be dominant, you know, just handle the situation. And
use that whip, baby boy.
Yeah.
Then they bang.
They bang, but she's thinking about getting a kid.
Yeah, this little positive PTSD or something.
I mean, she's thinking about it, man. It hurts.
I hate it because it's our boy Doc Tore. Yeah. He's getting just bamboozled here.
Yeah. It's a shame.
And we know he's a detective. He's gonna find out.
Like, man.
If anybody has the tools to find out, it's Doc Tore. He's just gotta put that cap on.
Detective.
He's gotta do is put the cap.
He's gotta find the cap first.
He's just got the whip. The cap's coming.
The cap's definitely coming.
We gotta, if someone's good with like
graphic design.
Yeah, Photoshop. Yeah, we just gotta get him in like full
Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock
Doc Tore.
All right. Now we go back to the Ludus grounds after the sex scene, right?
Yeah. So this is where Ney is.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right away, Dr. Ray moves up. Does anybody have the quote?
I don't.
He essentially says, you're shit with a short sword. Like, take this trident and net.
He was pissed. Ney was pissed.
He was pissed. But this is where Dr. A starts to establish his dominance, breaks out that whip, and whips Neus right there. The whole Ludus kind of gets hushed because this is probably the first time he's acted like a doctor should.
Show some assertiveness, man.
Yep.
Yeah, and they all start to get the message, I think. Gannicus was in his cell and kind of comes out too, right?
He was out training, I'm pretty sure, and then it happens, and then he basically looks to Bark and was like, yo, bro, let's go, and then just starts kind of fiercely sparring with him.
Yeah.
Fire under his ass.
Yeah, he exchanges some weird looks with Melita, who's on the balcony too. I hate how this is so uncomfortable because the Animaeus Gannicus Brotherhood was probably my favorite interaction between two characters, season aside. Yeah. Like, anytime they were on the screen together, they were just making magic. And now the Brotherhood is going through it.
And dude,
man,
the best part about, at least for me, I can't speak for Kyle and Paul. But the best part about this is because Melita and Gannicus aren't in the next season, like, you guys have no idea.
Right.
Like, it's so open-ended about what could happen.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And
the
that's
obvious answer is that Dr. Way kills both of them.
Just stabs them both in the face.
Yeah. And no way. Well, we know tragedy is going to strike Melita because he was
Spartacus was very solemn
about that and said, yeah, she was taken from me too soon. So something bad's going to happen.
I can't remember fully, but does he say she died in the first season or does he just say she was taken?
It's for sure implied that she died because even Badiatis mentions like his wife at some point in the first season.
Yeah, because I mean, it could have been like taken, meaning like left the, you know, sent away like Navia. I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
on the balcony during this scene,
same scene on the balcony. Yeah. It's Quintus, Lucretia, and Titus. And Lucretia and Quintus are kind of just urging him to take leave because of his health. I think the proposition, Quintus wants him to go to Neapolis to get some new recruits in. Mm-hmm. I think that's the guy's like, a new slave shipment in Neapolis. Let's take a little excursion there for the weekend.
I mean, he says, like, let's get away for a day or two at first, and he's saying, no, we're not getting away. And then he does the let's look at some recruits together, see if we could have the same eye and pick the same recruit.
He kind of does that thing that he did when Lucretia was offering him the honeyed wine, where he's serious and then takes it back. He says, you conspire against an old man, .. to your advantage. Let's leave for Neapolis tomorrow. Something like that.
This OG's got some tricks.
Dad jokes, dude.
Titus leaves and Quintus essentially puts Lucretia in charge of making the arrangements for Petronius. Essentially, she has the green light to a full-blown orgy. Mom and dad are away. Yeah. Like, Lucretia gets to play.
And then she expresses concern, rightfully so, that the Roman men, like, they won't, if they start getting an appetite for something crazy, like, I can't stop them. This is when Badiatis, which speaks to our conversation earlier, says, like, tell Solonius to come and he could kind of like help you out here. So I think that says a lot more about how Badiatis still considers him a brother.
Right.
Did Bodyatta suggest that?
Yes, he did.
Because she was expressing the concern. Did he call him good Salonius?
No,
he definitely did not.
But he didn't call him
Salonius
bad Salonius.
Calls himself good Salonius, bro.
He does.
I don't think Bodyatta's ever calls him good Salonius.
No, he
doesn't. I think Salonius calls himself good Salonius.
Tullius might, I don't know, but not Bodyatta.
Okay, yeah, and then I think it's still the Ludus scene. Yep. So Animaeus is approaching Asher and Dagon and giving them their winnings from the battle. Mm-hmm. Dagon gets twice the amount of coin as Asher because, and I quote, Doctore, you are half the man as him.
Man.
And essentially it comes out, Doctore says, Asher, if we didn't need you to translate for Dagon, you never would have been able to take up the sword.
I think he even... fake translate what Dagon says to say he's like, why doesn't Asher get more money?
Dagon's
asking why I
what's Dagon's quote? It's so good. He says, I'm gonna spend this on lots of pussy.
He says I'm gonna get myself a lot of pussy with this money.
But it's like I was
legend.
Like, yeah.
Beast. So Asher is, I mean,
yeah,
to his credit, this is, I mean, what you guys like about him, though. He's thinking on his feet.
Good Dagon is wondering why I didn't get as much as he did.
Good Dagon? Bro, no. Gladiators can't be good. I overrule that. Good Dagon. That's too far.
So next we get what? We get good Crixus offering.
We're just throwing it around. I hate it.
Good Crixus and good Blanda.
Yeah. I won't stand for it.
For real, though, this is a good moment.
Yeah, they are good people, though. Good Crixus and good Barca.
This is the moment I was hinting at earlier at the end of the first episode when you do get a lot more of that solidification of the future. Bromanship, like between these two, like the
bromanship.
It's too respectful to be.
Yeah.
But it's cool. They do bring up the Averni again, like saying that's Averni. Is that the name?
Alverni. Yeah.
Alverni.
Yeah.
Because that's just like the name of the basically the country enemy between the Gaul where Crixus is from. Like they always hate each other. We're warring tribes and stuff, and so they all use spears.
Yeah, we. So Crixus is only here to bring bread for the pigeons, which Barca says the pigeons were Octuses. Like, I never cared for them, but now they're all I have left. They have a heart-to-heart. Crixus says, you know, I'm a Gaul. We were at war with these people, but I was taken before I was able to take up arms. Like, I never fought the Alverni and all this stuff. But he says, Octus was my first kill in the arena. Like, he will
kill, not in the arena, kill, right?
Yeah, he was, I think he says kill in battle.
Yeah, because the whole point about the Alverni story was that he didn't get to fight against the spears, even though his brother and his dad did, was because he was too young to hold a sword. Then he got taken by the Romans. Yeah. So that's the whole thing. Like, Octus was his first kill ever.
Okay.
Okay.
And that's why he says he'll never be forgotten.
So, yeah. And that's all I said. It was just, you're absolutely right. They're planting seeds of the bromance, which I love because we love Barca, we love Crixus, and we know that they're going to be cool in Blood and Sand, but this is... they're tying it all together. That's what the prequel does a great job, is just continuity of the story,
dude,
getting us right to Blood and Sand.
It's just so fan service.
It really is awesome.
And it's great Crixus backstory here.
They threw these six episodes together in like half the time too. Like it wasn't even meant to happen this season. And like they only did it six episodes because it was on short notice because of like Andy's sickness, his round two of his sickness and stuff. Like they did a fantastic job for having like not a lot of, you know,
really seriously. I mean, it's a great full circle moment that like his, like, you know, Crixus' ambition was basically started with fighting people with spears. And now he's starting to realize it by fighting people with spears.
Mm-hmm. Not a weakness in season one.
Yeah. Rip Octus.
So next scene, we go to Quintus and Titus, who are in Neapolis, and they are at a slave auction. So the guy is just showing him his wares. I forget the first guy he points out if there was anything special about him, but Quintus immediately says he's favoring the left side, which shows that he has an injury in the right leg. And the guy's cool.
He knows what he's
doing.
Oh,
yeah, no, yeah, he knows how to walk the walk. But the next guy, he says, I have a Thracian. And like right away, Bodyatta stops him and says, Thracians are too difficult to control and infuriate the Gauls beyond reason. And
so
I was just like, oh my God,
man.
Are you kidding me?
That was the one who was just looking us in the face and giving us a wink.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh my gosh.
But do you want to just crush the second Neapolis scene real quick? So I'm pretty sure right after that, he says, like, Titus kind of says, like, you know, these guys are all shit, or basically
Let's get out of here and get a drink.
They're all shit. Let's go get a drink. we'll come back to what where it actually flashes to. But the second part of Neapolis was just basically Titus saying, you know, kind of them having a good father-son moment, and Titus saying, like, you know, I pretty much, the first thing I got out of it was that he never really approved of the marriage to Lucretia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, but it's also like he is kind of giving him positive, saying like, you're doing a good job. Like, I'm really kind of enjoying this. I'm helping you get to the right path and stuff like that. And then I think he just kind of moves on to say, like, let's go back to Capua. You knew those slaves were all shit. You just wanted to mend this relationship, and I love it. Thank you. Boom.
Yeah. Well, he also says, like, we didn't have to fucking come
here.
Yeah,
he was like, this is just a ploy to get us to bond, right? Yeah, and he's like, oh, you got me. Well, there's an orgy going on.
The exact note I have is, Dad wants to leave. Badiatis is pooping his silks. Because they show his face afterwards, and he's like, ah.
Is this the first time we hear him say that Lucretia was lower than him?
That's a
big deal. Like, I didn't realize that. And
he doesn't get into too many specifics, but there is lines later, and I have that written down. We could talk about that then or now. It doesn't really matter, but
yeah,
he just didn't approve of Lucretia being married.
Badiatis airs. He tells his dad, I wanted to study military. You said I couldn't, so I didn't. I did not want to be, you know, the Lanista and the Ludus, but I am, like, here I am doing everything that you asked of me. When have I ever steered you wrong? To which he said, when you married someone beneath you.
Yeah,
it was
right,
the one time you disobeyed me.
So that honestly is kind of like, you know, that's as good of a compliment as he's getting.
Yeah.
Also, I do want to say, like, I'm pretty sure Titus asked him. He saw through the guys. He said, you knew they were shit. Like, why are we here? And gave him the opportunity to suggest. Mm-hmm. He didn't put the words in his
mouth.
Oh,
that's true. That's true.
Badiatis lied to him and said,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it wasn't
like a white lie. Yeah.
Okay. But Titus insists they go.
I want to see the good in Badiatis. So,
and the important line there is that he does say, like, you know, just a few hours on the road. So there is a time gap. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Badiatis and his dad have been gone for enough time where they could have gotten away with this if the ending didn't happen. But all right, let's jump back to the villa.
So first off, we have Diana and Navia real quick. Navia's just like, we haven't talked since you had sex with that guy. What happened? And Diana is just a new woman. She said, I don't have time for your childish needs and stuff like that. Like, I have to work. And she looks miserable.
They tell her to go get washed for tonight and stuff. Like, she's going to be used again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Poor Diana.
Horrible life.
I wanted to like Diana in the beginning. She just didn't have a chance.
Yeah, she never had
a chance.
Too tight.
Yeah.
She fuck that picked. Weird guy.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, fucking Cassudius or whatever his name is. I don't even care what his name is. All right.
Anyway, so it's Lucretia and Melita. Lucretia says, I want you by my side tonight. Like, there is only one thing I ask of you. What does she say? Give this list of gladiators to Doctor A and have them oiled and, like, up here by tonight. And she says, I want you as my right-hand girl tonight, which is an honor. Melita thanks her, but says, I ask that you keep Doctor A from telling Titus about the dealings that we have.
And keep your man in line.
Doesn't she also say, like, I'll keep you?
Oh, yeah. She
I'm
said,
not going to let them, like, fuck you.
Yeah.
And she also says, you know, because if Doctori finds out, he might find, or if Titus finds out from Doctori, then Doctori might find out some other stuff, and that would be bad. Yeah. Remember? So it's kind of like
blackmail.
Yeah, doing the blackmail thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, right there, Salonius arrives. And they say, oh, good Salonius arrives. Let's get this party. They do drop a good
now
Salonius.
It's a rager.
Yeah,
skip
now the party
there's
can
like all
start.
These Romans there.
Yeah. For one, personally was shocked at how many people were there.
Yeah.
Because I feel like you don't get that impression.
Too.
Yeah. But that's how the Zoomer parties go, dude. Oh, yeah, you invite some people who invite some people who invite some people.
Boy, don't
who
we
do
know?
You know here?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All
right. Quintus Badiatis?
No, I know a good Salonius.
I know good Salonius. Oh, you're a friend of good Salonius. Get the hell in here.
We're all friends of good Salonius. All
right, quick question. Who is the character you would most want to party with from Spartacus?
Gaia?
Or Gannicus.
Gannicus?
Yeah.
Gaia.
Gannicus.
Change my mind.
Gannicus.
A 1v1 party with Gaia.
You were right. You were like, either way works, dude. Gannicus, Gaia, we're good.
Give me all the G's in the show.
Gnaeus starts with a G.
Yeah, it's true.
Silent G. Real G's move in silence like lasagna. Lil Wayne said that.
All right, let's skip to Lucretia's epic speech, which is, you know, she's a great host. Yes. Go to a party at Lucrecia's hosting.
You could party with Lucrecia too. Yeah.
She'd be a good one.
Yeah, at the party, Deanna's just getting boned again by the same guy who's like
Raskos again, yeah.
Yeah, Raskos. He's wearing like ram horns and, you know, it just sucks. Deanna's going through it right now, which is really unfortunate.
I'm a little surprised there's no bets going on how many thrusts he can last.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd have been like low-hanging fruit to like a little callback. But
did Tullius already arrive at this point?
Not yet. About to. Okay. Yeah. So Melita sends Navia, gives her a jug of wine, says, put this in the pantry and don't return until all the guests leave. Yeah, essentially says, Navia, get out of here. You're the only other virgin. Like, look what's happening to Deanna.
And I
get
didn't
here.
Necessarily like that scene, that specific interaction, because of what they say in season one when Lucrecia makes it a point when Asher's like asking for Navia and stuff to say, like, I protected her virginity since she was a child. Like, if Melita didn't do that, she would have gotten railed.
Yeah, I mean, she was being like caressed.
Yeah.
And that's why Melita says it. So,
yeah, you know, like it was a good point that they made it explicit that she was a virgin, mm-hmm. like earlier.
Yeah.
But then they kind of ruined it there because, like, was Lucrecia going to let that happen? It didn't. I
mean, it might just be Lucrecia
talking herself. Yeah.
Yeah. Talking herself up to Asher.
Okay, so Lucrecia, being the great host she is, says, is essentially just playing to all the high Romans that are there and says, for one night only, you are masters of this house and all pleasures that, you know, all the occupants, all my gladiator slaves are yours to enjoy. And who else should stroll on in? But good Tullius.
Good Tullius is the best.
Say it. I knew you were going to say it.
I know. It was low hanging fruit, though. What are you going to do? So good Tullius arrives. Right as she finishes that quote, you are the masters of this house, and says, an enticing offer, one I would see to full advantage. Mm. That is where you ask, who do you know here, Tully?
What was your first thought?
And he would say, good Salonius.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
I thought someone was dying. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what I don't know how I took it, but I was figuring that something bad was going to happen to one of her girls. Yeah. I didn't know that it was going to go where it went.
I thought it was going to be a gladiator.
Okay.
Was going to be a
gladiator. Almost got both.
So. Yeah, right. So,
yeah, 100%. Yeah. We will get to it, though.
Yeah, I just would like to say that Lucrecia making that speech, just for whatever reason, my mind went right to, like, Littlefinger as, like, just, like, owning the brothel. It just seemed like it's, like, you know, some, like, presentation that he would give to somebody. Like, would try to give it to Oberyn, but Oberyn would be like, fuck off, bro. Where's the pussy?
No, yeah. Lucrecia knows she is the perfect pair for Body Otis in almost every single way possible.
Yeah. And we talked about
just, like, it. Way hotter than him, but whatever.
Throughout all of Blood and Sand, last binge with us season, that Lucrecia is great at, you know, the scheming, and she's, you know, such a like you just said, a great pair to Body Otis. It's nice to see, like, basically the seeds of where that started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's already, like, the trust goes both ways because he has the easy job. It's just to go to Neapolis with his dad. Like, seemingly, that's the easy job. And he said, Lucrecia, I'm trusting you to handle Petronius and catering to all of these higher-up Romans.
And don't let anything bad happen.
And trusted Lucrecia.
And Salonius, though.
And Salonius, he knew
that
was
you're right. That was a key part.
You're right, but Lucrecia.
And Gaia, too, because he at this point really likes Gaia.
He left the villa in Lucretia's
for
hands,
sure,
I would say. And I just love that he trusts her because it's just awesome. And Lucretia is a great character. But anyway, moving on at the party, it's kind of Lucrecia, Gaia, and Salonius are like, what the fuck is Tullius doing here? How did this happen? And Salonius says, I will break words and gauge, you know, intent. See what's up. Salonius
is just
the wingman homie that's just trying to.
He's not, though. He's fake.
You're right. Yeah, you're right. He's not the wingman.
Yeah, we find out the next time you see him, which is about a minute later, is that he's lying because he is the one who told Tullius what was going down.
True, true.
He tries to say, like, oh, I did it so this wouldn't happen. But Tullius says, like, you're chasing favor and, like, basically you better shut the fuck up or the favor's gone.
Yeah.
Is this the slight? I guess it is, right?
I mean, it's definitely a slight, but
Tullius.
I kind of bought a little bit of that. I don't know. Maybe I bought it more than I should have based on how you just said that, Kyle.
I kind of bought it because when Salonius, he seemed genuine the whole time, or at least they were leading us to believe that he was genuine in his intentions. And two, like, the explanation checks out.
Yeah.
His rationale is thorough.
It's sketchier, and it's on the path for sure. But I still, if this was me watching this for the first time, would not think Salonius is going to be the absolute enemy of Badiatis yet. That's okay. Not on my mind yet. 100%. I don't know what you guys think, but
the only issue that I'm thinking about it now is, when the hell did good Salonius tell Tullius? Because when Tullius sweeps him away at the market, they don't know.
Right.
Salonius has no idea that they're throwing an orgy.
He knows because they...
No, not yet.
No, he doesn't.
Because they didn't have to go back to the villa. I think
it's assumed they have off-screen.
It's just an off-screen thing.
Because when Badiatis is still there with his dad saying, like, all right, bring Salonius, like, you have to tell Salonius. There's a lot of time in between. Like I said, the hours, like, there's time. There's time.
Any kind of conversation that Salonius is going to have with Tullius is going to piss Badiatis off.
Yeah.
And if Badiatis finds out that Tullius was there and Gaia's dead and all this shit happened because Salonius gave him the heads up, shit's hitting the fan.
Yeah.
You know?
Good point. Yeah. Another good point that I don't want to overlook is continuing with the Lucretia love, how Lucretia's reaction to Tullius is like, he dares show his face here after what he did to my husband.
Yep.
And she's a rider.
Yeah.
She's a straight rider.
Yeah.
Too many big players there to say, get the fuck out.
Yeah, right. You know? Can't do that.
Yeah.
So Salonius is trying to see what's up with Tullius, even though he already knows. And Gaia says, Petronius and his guests stand right with anticipation. Let us see them to climax. Enter Lucretia with like a tribe of slaves dressed as animals and masks and...
Direct parallel to, obviously, Alethea and the Spartacus scene and like all the sex that goes on in the first season. I just thought this was all awesome. And it was just like, obviously it's referred to as the episode title, Beneath the Mask.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
But before they can indulge, Tullius chimes in and says, but first I want an aside, and pervades the gladiators, walks right up to Gannicus and says, I want to spar Gannicus. I'm thinking like, what are you doing, Tullius? What?
What did you guys think?
Lucretia kind of chuckles and says, bring out the wooden swords. And he says, no. I want the clang of steel. They're about to fight in an exhibition with steel swords. And like, we know that Gannicus can't do anything.
Right where Varro died.
I'm just thinking, are they going to do our man Gannicus like this?
I mean, Doctore says to him, like, you know, make it a show. Don't make him bleed. Don't injure him. You got to take a few cuts. Mm-hmm. And then Gannicus is like, you kidding me, man? And he's like, you don't want to die here because, like, you piss him off, we'll kill you.
Yeah.
I mean,
Tullius knows the deal.
Yeah.
And he just wants to, because Badiatis isn't there to, like, keep things in order, he knows he can just do whatever he really wants.
I mean, this is exactly what Lucretia was worrying about.
Yeah.
Like, literally, exactly what she was worrying about. You could see her face when he's starting to have this conversation. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
So, is there much to the actual fight? Like,
I wanted to bring up a question for you guys, because we made it a big deal about at the end of season one, the finale, one of the best episodes of television ever, when Badiatis has the sword and he's actually like fighting well.
Yeah.
Like Tullius and Badiatis would be nice to see in the arena, right? Yeah. Like those two would be great.
What about Salonius and Badiatis?
Oh, the three only person who's fought in the arena.
Oh, hell yeah.
I honestly think I would take Tullius though.
I mean,
he was he was pretty good.
I mean, I liked the fact that Gannicus, like, at least two or three times put the sword to his neck to show, like, dude, I got you.
Yeah.
But I mean, even Melita later says, like, you took a lot of cuts mm-hmm. from him, even though Doctore said to take some. But the point is that he's like, I was wondering if Gannicus was gonna just like lose his shit and just start like at least like knock him on his ass or do something to cause a problem.
Did the idea of him realistically dying in this scene, like,
I saw what happened to Varro and like,
and the fact that he's not in season two, like,
it's just because he could have died and like nobody could
have
done anything. Like, the situation was completely in Tullius's hands, and like Gannicus, it was out of his control.
I mean, he tries to go for the kill and Lucretia says something to stop it.
Thank God she does. She just says, let's get to the orgy, essentially. Yeah. Like, don't spoil the good wares. She immediately turns to Melita and says, get his ass to the Medicus now. Yep. Like, get him out of here.
I just think it's cool to mention he does give Missio.
Right. Oh, sorry.
And then that kind of justifies Lucretia freaking out a little bit. Because he's like, he's surrendering. It's not like you're just killing him off of like a turn and something like that. Mm-hmm. So it's like, chill the fuck out, Tullius. So you touch my boy.
Two things I'd like to point out would be, Spartacus would have handled that situation terribly.
Terribly.
Would have been Glaber, that would have been terrible. Yeah.
There would have been head removed from body.
Yeah, definitely. And while Tullius is a little douche for doing that, he definitely got the party to another level.
Yeah, so true, dude.
Because they were feeling Tullius it. Now? Yeah, yeah. Because they showed it and we're like, oh, and then it's like, all right, let's fuck.
Yeah. No, you're right. The vibe went up. Good vibe definitely. Check. Good job, Tullius. Yeah. Only time.
Yeah, seriously.
Literally.
Okay, so then we get Gannicus and Melita, and they essentially just confess their love to each other, like confess their feelings.
Whoa,
to each other.
Word.
Yeah, confess
that.
Their
yeah.
feelings. I brought it back right away.
Yeah.
Gannicus's response to Melita saying you took too many hits was, I was ordered not to raise a hand. Other commands have been more pleasurable.
Mm-hmm. My guy.
Yeah. So they just confess their mutual feelings. There's more to it than just being forced to have sex. And they kind of make out a little bit. And I'm just thinking, poor Doc.
Yeah.
That's the last we get of those two for this episode, yeah. right? So we can talk openly about the predictions.
Or doesn't something happen at the end of the episode?
I don't believe so.
No, oh, okay. No more with them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's all orgy and then
okay, so
yeah,
that's their last
party.
Okay,
and orgy.
Okay.
You said predictions. What are you asking specifically?
I want to know what you guys stake your claim because you don't get another chance.
We did this last episode too, man. I think that this is just like I'm actually pretty pissed off that Gannicus is going full in. Like that actually pisses me off.
I think I was just about to say body artist orders. Melita to death, but then Doctore still likes Bodiatus in season one, so that can't be a thing. I don't know.
You gotta really, I guess the context clues of season one are important because they obviously knew season one at the time, so they did a good job of not breaking any.
Yeah, maybe she gets like sent to the mines or something, or sold, or just. But it seemed like Doctore had confirmation she dies. I don't know how we're gonna get there because I don't see who has any issue with Melita as of right now.
Dude, monogamy is like a thing of like the BC time. So you can have three. You can have two wives or two husbands, right?
You can, if you want.
You can.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pissed off at our boy, man. I think that, you know.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like it's rushed. I mean, obviously it's six episodes, we're on episode four. I just think that, you know, you show the broship, like the major bromanship, okay? And then I said to you in the last episode that I took it almost as a rook that he liked her even before that sex scene because like I took the gazing of their eyes like I know, I'm pretty sure, Brian, you just said they're friends and you got it like that. But for some reason, I was like, literally, the first time they show her looking at him when he's in the quote-unquote arena, I was like, they banging? Like, that's what I thought.
Damn, because I think either Kyle or Paul also said that to me off-screen, like off-podcast without you two in the room. And I took it like you did, Brian. I never saw that even a little bit the first time I was watching it. Like, I thought it was complete just best friendship.
Yeah, I mean, how many times we got to do the typical, like, two best friends fall in love with the same chick? Like, you know.
It's a little different because the one best friend is already married to her.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I mean,
Gannicus's whole thing, what he says is basically, like, she's like, we shouldn't do this, like, it's bad, whatever, and he says to not say it would be worse than the lie we tell on Emmaus, which I don't agree with.
Yeah, and also, like, if you know her so well, are you going to tell me that it takes banging her to just be to have any feelings? Like, I mean, you should have liked her in that way or had feelings for her if you're that close anyway. I mean, unless you're just getting all into the lust shit, you know?
I just feel like it's a very unique situation.
Yeah.
Obviously, he like likes her as a person, and then now he's commanded to have sex with her. And, you know, as they say, sex changes everything.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
it's just an interesting dynamic. What plays out is pretty much on
very weird situation.
Yeah, we have no idea if he lives or dies,
or her. I mean, yeah, I guess
because
talked about.
You had told me, which with no spoilers, you just said it makes sense why he's not in the first season.
Yeah, of course,
it has to. Yeah. So we don't know if that means he's sent away. We don't know if that means he dies. Doctor, are you gonna kill him, dude?
Tell us right now.
Doctore is not gonna kill Gannicus.
He's gonna have a tear running down his cheek and he's gonna
maybe he like escapes.
Not
maybe
kill him.
Sent to the mines. Maybe he gets bought by another Lannista. But this ain't going to let him get bought.
I mean, that was the whole plot point of the first three episodes.
Well, yeah, you're right.
Badiatis got pissed on rather than sell him.
Yeah. I mean, we know that Body Eyes, like, he doesn't care about the love shit when it comes to his slaves. Like, if Gannick isn't Doc Torre or his Doc Torre and his champion, it's going to be Melita that goes somewhere, you know? So
yeah, he cares, but the bare minimum of anything that he cares about is keeping them happy.
Right.
Yeah. Want to get back to the party?
Let's get back to the party.
The party turned orgy at this point, so people are just...
Ooh, last thing, though, real quick. He does say, he does quickly say, did we mention the quote when Gannicus, Melita says, like, what would happen if he figures out what's going on right here when they're hooking up, and he says, I would kill us both. Did we say that?
She says, like, if you were him, what would you do? And he said, I would kill us both.
Yeah. We did not say that, but interesting.
We mentioned that outcome, right?
Yeah.
Doctor A is a better man than Gannicus, though.
True.
Good Doctor A.
All right, party part three.
Party part three. Yeah, so this is where we get Asher and Dagon talking to a masqueraded man who is essentially saying, I want to fuck Dagon in the ass. And Asher is lying through translation to Dagon, essentially not making him privy to the fact that he's going to get fucked in the ass. Yep. Just saying, oh, this guy just wants to hang out with you. Meanwhile, he's telling the guy that Dagon likes it as rough as possible, like to just fuck him hard. Asher's just a little. He's just sour grapes.
Back to the snake funny part. Like, I'm fine with that. Like, that's funny to me.
Just so fucked up.
Not too funny to Dagon.
No,
Dagon just saved his life, and okay, he got paid a little more money.
So messed up.
But now you're going to go get your boy banged in the ass?
Well, I don't think that was going to be debatable anyway, but the way it happens could have been better.
Okay, yeah, this is true. Yeah, I mean, they don't have a choice.
Did you notice in the background Barca just getting butt-fucked?
No, I didn't know.
He's just in the background, just taking it. And then, dude, the first scene, as it's panning to the Asher and Dagon thing, like, you get dangerously close to seeing, like, a full-on blowjob, like, scenario.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you see, like, the head. Oh, my God, man. They get crazy with what they're allowed to do on TV.
Yeah. Well, I really think that this is one of the most graphic shows that I've ever watched.
Yeah. I think it has to be.
Paul's description of this season was basically softcore porno. So it's definitely living up to it.
Man, we could have used him on this episode of the
podcast. That is like a huge. That felt like a huge turning point for Asher and Dagon, at least in terms of like, if I was Asher, why would you do that? Like,
there's no way out of it now.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess you just blame it on the guy who's about to bang him.
Yeah,
but like, if Dagon like goes and is like, you obviously lied to me.
Yeah,
like. I don't know. Well, Asher's not thinking like that. He's just thinking, fuck Dagon, because he got more coin.
And respect.
Yeah, I mean, no proof, because he can't translate. He can't understand, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, we get Salonius comes back to it. Good Salonius comes back to report on Tullius' presence and just says, yeah, he's only here just to rattle Quintus, I think. Like, he's just here to throw him off, like, just kind of be a schemer, just be here and fuck up the house. I don't know.
He's not drinking. He's not fucking.
Yeah. They make a comment. He's not doing anything. Why is he here? Just hanging out. And Gaia steps up and says, okay, I'll seduce him.
I'll suck your dick.
I'll suck his dick.
I'll suck your dick.
Don't do it, Gaia.
So but she does it. Okay. Then we get Gaia and Tullius kind of like having a side in a more private room. Tullius was saddened to find her without family once again when her husband passed, and they're doing the dance. Essentially, Tullius, they start to kind of get into it and start fucking. Tullius swears to never speak of the orgy to Titus if Gaia delivers a message to Quintus and Lucretia.
Yeah, I mean,
did you think
when they went into the room, I was like, she's dead. I mean,
it was palpable.
Yeah,
it was.
And it's also the fact that she wasn't in the first season. You knew,
like I was.
She flirts well.
I thought that it was going to be like, as he's saying, deliver the message, I thought he was on top of her getting ready to, like, stab her. Yeah. Like, I thought it was going to be right there that it happened.
He was stabbing her.
Yeah, I mean, but, but yeah.
He definitely stabbed her.
He had to get his nut first, and then.
I mean, he's been wanting her since he was young, man.
Yeah.
So let that happen.
Okay, so from the Rook
character development, though.
We didn't think that she was making it out
of the room. No, not at all.
But for development.
Nice call.
Did you guys, there's some Detective Doctoria hats on top of you guys right there? From
the best. These are definitely the moments. Yeah. These are definitely moments when I want to have someone that watched it in the prequel into the first season order, because as long as you cut off the first scene of the first episode, which ruins the end of the first season,
definitely,
it's something you can do.
100%.
Yeah. It definitely would be interesting to
watch this season. It would be cool to get the raw emotions of what people think about Chris the first time around.
It's tough because everything feels like a callback, but will you get that callback when you're watching? Like, now you're going to see it in season one where you're like, oh, that's from the prequel. Or like,
it's just like foreshadowing books, but we're just doing it in the reverse. Exactly. So I think you would say enjoy
like
it.
They wouldn't be as satisfying because they're meant to be fan service if you have the knowledge of Blood and Sand. Right, so you wouldn't like pick up on
that's my argument, I think that it almost would be like in a vacuum. If this was the first season of a show, like, pretty good season.
It's only six episodes.
We got to make Kathleen and Dave watch it in the prequel.
The problem is they don't waste as much time setting up like the titles and stuff because they know that this is the second season you're watching, so they don't like put
the only titles we get are Senator, and then no one else really has a title. There's Ridge.
I mean, more like Domino would be Doctor. That stuff would be a little bit more confusing because it's not as obvious. Like, they're throwing it at your face.
I think Doctor
would be, and you'd learn what Dominus is, Ludus, Lanista. It can be done. I mean, people are smart.
It's just an interesting way to do it.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, I mean, like you're doing right now, Jimmy. What a Feast for Crows.
Yeah. Yeah, just, Feast for Dragons.
Oh, yeah, Feast for Dragons, rather.
Dance of Dragon, Feast for Crows. You're just doing it mixed order, how it should go chronologically.
Which, you know, if those books ever come out, that's probably what I'm going to do.
It's interesting because I didn't do it the other way. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was going to say about character development was that Tullius likes redheads.
He does.
And that actually sparked something in me. Is that...
yeah, did it?
Sexually or just...
yeah.
Fuck off. Is that... Has Lucretia ever worn... The red hair this season yet?
I believe she's worn red earlier in the season.
I think she has one time. She went to the markets, one of the Varus scenes, she was in red. She definitely has this season.
Okay, because I was wondering if literally she starts wearing it because as like a tribute to Gaia.
Well, we'll see in 5 and 6. We'll see what happens.
Well, I'm saying if she's already worn it, doesn't matter then. Because I thought she started wearing it.
Yeah, but she exclusively wears it.
She doesn't exclusively wear it in the first season.
Wait.
Because I have a feeling I can't remember her wearing the red.
So wait, you're asking if Lucretia wore it?
Like in season one?
Oh, I thought you asked if Gaia ever wore it before.
No. Gaia's worn it in the season multiple times. Yeah. And I'm asking.
Lucretia, I can't remember.
That's what I'm saying. Does Lucretia wear it as like a tribute to
her friend? I was very
sure
up until now. You're really pushing me on it. And now you're making me question.
Honestly,
I
thought the whole
point
of this season is that she wasn't really ever wearing wigs.
That's what I was just going to say.
Brown hair, normal. Like when she, especially in the first episode when they're making her look young. Yeah. And I know she's doing it this episode too. I can't.
She's not wearing a wig at this point in the episode.
And she didn't wear it in the first episode.
But does she wear it when they go?
I know she has it in the second season, in season one.
She wears them a lot.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
So if she hasn't worn any wigs yet, then that's a good callback to doing it because of Gaia.
Right.
Because Gaia's done it multiple times, yeah.
We're just going to say that it is.
Yeah, better writing if it is. Yeah.
All in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
All right, cool. Okay, cool.
Yeah, Lucretia just chilling.
Reddit, correct us if you need to.
Chilling with no makeup on.
You don't have to. we'll keep it as headcanon.
All right, so back in the villa main room, post Gaia.
It's the party ending. Petronius is on his way out. He says, I will send word to Quintus to discuss the opening games.
Lucretia brings up gladiators, though.
Yeah, it seems like a favorable response. Yeah,
mission accomplished.
Petronius is leaving very happy and satisfied. Looks like they might be able to secure a place in the opening games. Awesome. Good Salonius says that he will wait for all the guests to leave. Lucretia says Gaia has like an insatiable appetite. It could be a while. He says, nah, I'll chill.
We do get a quick Diana, you know, miserable as fuck again scene where she makes, does she see, they make eye contact with Navia? Is that what happens?
Yeah, they're cleaning.
And then she kind of just goes away. So a little more of a spiral.
And then Lucretia and Tullius kind of have this weird interaction where they're both just kind of feeling each other out. Tullius is being very cryptic.
Yeah.
And
also his entrance to the scene is weird because she is like thinking out loud and he finishes her thought, I think, as he walks out from behind the curtain. It's like, look at this fucking guy.
I thought like she sees like his guy too. And she looks at him like, I thought he was going to like beat the shit out of her or something to send a message.
I thought that too. Yeah, because they made a point that
she looks over
and saw his like goon.
Yeah.
he does in this scene, like when he's talking to Lucretia, like that fake ass smile, like that super inflated smile, that made me just want to punch the screen so bad.
Talia sucks for sure.
Just because I knew,
right?
I knew what they were about to walk into.
He essentially says, my reply to Quintus is with Gaia. Like, go see to her. He walks out, and Lucretia is walking towards Gaia's chambers and then sees the red wig on the ground.
Which she then takes as her own as a tribute.
So get a little
I would love if that's right, because I
now
have that
it makes
today.
A lot of sense that it would be right. Yeah. So I'm going to say, okay, Reddit, fact check us.
Yep. Yeah.
We don't want to be bozos. But yeah, so she gets frantic and sees, walks in on Gaia with her head bashed in, bald, like.
So sad.
Yeah, she's dead. It's unfortunate. R.I.P. to a real one, I would say.
Yeah.
She's up there.
Great unfortunate things.
She's up there with Varro and people that are just in heaven now.
Yeah, just in heaven.
As OG.
Varro's kicking it with his wife
true,
right now.
Well, he's not kicking it. He's probably accumulating his debt. Yeah. So he's probably handling his gambling.
He's playing some bad dice.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's at the roulette table right now.
Yeah.
Our boy Spartacus is just killing it in
three. Oh, Spartacus is living his best life right now, for sure. With Sarah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Boy. Okay, so anyway, but Lucretia is very, very distraught about Gaia being dead. She is not living her best life, is she?
No, she's not.
Mm-mm. So, yeah, that sucks. Gaia is dead. She's out of it. Kaput. Whatever. Next we have Lucretia, Titus, and Quintus, and they're just talking it out. Like,
they just returned from the Neapolis. Yeah. Like, unexpecting, you know, Badiat is hoping that the party's done.
Yeah.
The deed's finished. Like, they accomplished their goal. And then obviously because of Tullius, like, this whole thing happens.
This is your parents coming home from a weekend Saturday night instead of Sunday night. And seeing your best friend, like, with his head in the toilet, just puking up, house in absolute shambles.
But even worse, because she's
even
dead.
Worse because it's someone is dead.
But I guess for Papa B, he doesn't give a shit that she's dead. Someone is dead, not
they're
Gaia
just talking
dead.
It out, and we get all of their intentions in the aftermath of Gaia dying. Lucretia wants blood. She has a great scene. She says, I aim at retribution, not, you know, anything else. Like, what I want is revenge.
She says, I claim vengeance. You know, because Papa B says something to her, like, what do you want from me?
He says, do you want to grieve or something? Yeah. And she's like, no, I want retribution. Like, Lucretia is all on team fuck Tullius, as she has been, because she's a great wife and her and Badiatis are the best.
And this is a little bit sad, but when, you know, Titus walks away to the balcony for another or whatever, he just walks away. And then, like, even Quintus, like, doesn't even offer any sympathy to Lucretia. He just, like, she, like, looks for him and he kind of turns.
Well, which, I mean, he has to go. He has to, but he should. I mean, it's his fault, too. Like, she didn't want to do this. Yeah. She said no. He said yes. And he goes, all right, Lucretia, take care of this
shit. So true,
You know?
But then this is where we get a private conversation between Quintus and Papa B.
Yeah, and let me say, not very private, because she's kind of like 10 feet away. But
I'm
like,
glad you said that.
And he just kind of he doesn't threaten to dissolve their marriage, but he says, if you don't, of your own desire, dissolve the marriage, then you have to drop the family name and you're out of this house.
Yeah, you will make that choice yourself or be gone from this house with her.
Yeah.
So gives him the ultimatum, and that told me that Papa B is dead.
Yep. I agree.
Nope.
And then this leads to the next scene of Lucretia going out onto the balcony for the last time and seeing Gaia as they're about to throw her off the cliff.
Yeah, you know? Titus says the story is going to be she drank too much and fell off the cliff.
Right. She was known to do.
They're about to hurl her off the cliff. What an awful
death.
She's
bald.
She's bald, bloodied, and, like, it's just not the end I wanted for Gaia.
But this end scene, I thought I got hype after, because after she, you know, they throw her off, sad, RIP Gaia forever, then they kind of go to Lucretia, and her face is going from, like, desperately sad to starting to, like, you know, she's starting to tighten up her face, the music starts going and then, like, it's just like hype, like, revenge is coming, and then that's the end.
I want to amend something really quickly, because I just said that he doesn't care that Guy is dead, he cares that someone's dead. It's a hybrid, because he cares that, because she's a Roman.
Okay. Yeah,
so he comes back and he's like, and there's a dead Roman.
Right.
And, like, that's obviously terrible.
Yeah, because if it was Gannicus, he wouldn't have cared. Like, a slave. Like, if Gannicus, you know.
Yeah, because you can easily just say, like, yeah. All right, we so I have a question for the vets and some, and a question for my fellow Rook. I guess we'll go vets first. Luke, if anyone has listened to season one of our pod, everyone knows that you love Sura. Mm-hmm. So let's do Sura or Gaia. Pick one.
Sura's looks. I love Gaia's personality, but... And Sarah's like super religious and stuff. Missing a lot of boxes.
One gun to your head. Which one would you want to
be? What are we talking here?
Mary.
Mary, yeah. Like your partner.
I'm marrying Gaia. Let's get it. We're going to have a fun opium life.
All right, Kyle. Gaia or Mira?
Wow.
I thought I was getting Gaia. Like Sarah, yeah. You bastard.
Mira.
Okay. That was easier for you than, yeah.
I'm basing that off of series knowledge.
Okay. All right. Now, Brian, if we're going to go ahead and say that we think Papa B's dead, do you think it's going to be Body Otis or Lucretia that kills him?
Whoa. Great question. It's going to be Body Otis, though. Okay. I think like it's got to be the son. That in very dramatic fashion, it's going to be Body Otis kills his dad. Okay. It has to be.
That'll be a scene.
Yeah, right, that's...
I'm trying to think of anything I can
question
like, would compare to that. No, in terms of like a son killing his father, like a child killing their parent, like that. Immediately, my mind goes to Monty killing his mom in The 100, which was horrific.
Mm, yeah. Just watched that recently.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah. I mean, Body Otis taking down spoilers. His dad would be so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's not that big of a spoiler.
Any hot questions you want to put in front of them before this? Because. This is it. This is the last time they're going to be able to predict.
Oh, crap. True.
Yeah. Episode 6.
Nah, you caught me with cock and ass.
Dude, you get episode 6. Yes. has, oh, my God. Episode 6 has one of the best. I'm done. It's so good. Episode 6 is so fucking good.
Though. We good to end the pod right there?
I think we're good.
I think we touched on this good enough. Guys, as always, we're going to be continuing our Binge With Us Rooks and Vets series as we progress through Spartacus, Gods of the Arena. Next up, we'll be covering episodes 5 and 6 entitled Reckoning and The Bitter End, respectively. If you're not caught up yet, be sure to go back and listen to our Binge With Us series covering Spartacus, Blood and Sand. This, of course, is the prequel series that we're covering right now. As always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
We love you guys.